guys does get real people. When real guys talk real fortune, he will. Great. Market game changer. Does get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Certain guys, you just gotta recognize, I gotta pay the money, I gotta keep it. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We're not gonna make it. Sometimes you gotta create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron's decision.
You don't have a good problem with execution, right?
He burning a lot of bridges. He's going to be hated in Chicago. He's going to be hated in Cleveland. He's going to be hated in New York. And that's what I'm excited to see.
Now, I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's going to be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play it.
Welcome to Real Sports Guys, where real guys talking sports. It's your boy Marcus the Game Changer in the building with my man D. Wills. And we're going to hold it down, Ray. You know, unfortunately, Ray had a hunting accident. So he won't be with us tonight.
Told him to leave Bambi alone.
Bambi got his revenge. Bambi was waiting on him. So, you know, he had a little bit of an accident, so he won't be joining us tonight. But we're still going to hold it down. You know, we're going to jump in and start get to talking sports. Before we get in, if you're interested in calling in and joining the conversation, hit us up and get on with the Real Sports Guys at 1-347-989-0844. That's 347-989-0844. So get on with the Real Sports Guys. If you have an opinion, come strong or don't come strong or don't come at all. You know, so... So, D, man, how's life been treating you? You know, we gotta get in. We got a lot to talk about this week. We got a ton to get into.
Besides Obama being in town, there was a line about 12 miles long. It was good. It had me thinking about, you know, the game last night, you know, being in Wisconsin and in Chicago and the whole, you know, border. If you're not, you know, not living in the Midwest, you know, nothing like a Bears-Packers rivalry. It's crazy. And to watch, you know, for the first time, I think, you know, I don't know, what was it, say 12 years or so, where both teams are undefeated.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while to watch them. And you know, I predicted Chicago would win. My predictions this week, I know we all didn't get a chance to put in on it. And it was just one of those gut feelings I had, like the Steelers getting tight. There was no rash and there was no... You know, statistical analysis was nothing. It was just one of those things you just felt like, you know, there's some momentum going that somehow they're going to figure out how to win the game. But this places questions on Green Bay, you know, just the penalties. They bailed Cutler out of a couple of turnovers that turned out to be, you know, a pass interference call or something like that, but just killing themselves, Green Bay. So, I don't know where you put Green Bay after this game or where you put Chicago. But it was definitely, you know, two teams that you're going to see going to be in it in the NFC for the entire year. And it might mean that, you know, the Giants next week facing the Bears might be 0-4 or whatever it might be. But it was a hell of a game, a good old physical Green Bay-Chicago game. So that kind of excited me. Lovey's job is safe for one more week. And, you know, it's a team that's going up. So that to me, I really want to see. But I don't know what to think about Green Bay. So that's one that I left with more question marks about them.
Yeah, a couple of things that stood out to me watching that game. Green Bay has to do something. They have to, Ted Thompson has to make a move and bring in somebody who can give them some semblance of a running game. Right now, that passing game is amazing and it's awesome, but it's not going to be what it can be if they can't find balance. Aaron Rodgers is a good, you know, right under that top tier. You know, he's right knocking at the door, being, you know, getting in that room with Peyton and Drew Brees and Tom Brady. He's knocking on the door, ready to come and sit at the table in that room with those other three elite quarterbacks. But he's not there yet, and I don't think he can effectively carry a team just yet without a solid complement. Because even though Ryan Grant wasn't flashy, he wasn't, you know, an unbelievable back, he was still a 1,200-yard back. He was still effective. And it's going to be hard to replace that production and that balance that it gave them, because now the play action isn't as effective as it was before. And that's a big part of how they manufacture big plays, is being able to draw those safeties up and get Jennings and Jones and Driver and those guys behind them. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think Thompson has to make a move to get a runner in there. The other thing that stood out was the Bears. You know, this was a game that was an ugly game. They looked like the Bears team that went back to the Super Bowl and lost to the Colts. That's the type of football they played, where they played good defense, got some plays in the special teams, with a block kick and a return punt. And, you know, at times I couldn't tell if that was Jay Cutler or Rex Grossman throwing the ball, you know, because he had some bad, he made some great throws. He made some throws where it was like, you know, the first pick he had, it was just like, that got away from you. It just totally got away from you.
That's right.
So it wasn't even in the vicinity of the guy he was trying to get the ball to. So, and you got to take that good and that bad with Cutler and with that scheme with Martz, because those are, you got two ultra aggressive guys. Some picks are gonna be thrown. You know, there's some picks to get against Chicago.
What I liked about it though is how they incorporate Olsen, because that's what I was worried about. Because Mark's offense has never really utilized a tight end, and I like the way he's got Olsen in. I thought they could have used Forte, not because I had him on my fantasy team, but because I felt like they weren't using him much in the game plan. But on the other side, the one thing, Green Bay used to be one of the best teams at running the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, or just different ways they used to think about getting the ball to the running back. And, like you said, that's a part, either running the ball or using your running back as an extension of a run. One of those two things.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be able to do that to get people coming up, to get you more into some single coverage, or getting people thinking about, you know, we can't double enough, or whatever it might be. But they lost all concept of the run. And you're right, he's got to make a move on that. But what I do like about it is, I mean, Olsen was a, you know, bright spot. He made a great catch there at the end. I mean, he got up there and just, you know, basically jumped off, bodied him out, looked like he's rebounded. You know, made a great snap. And, you know, so he's, you know, I know he was worried, but I like the way they're utilizing him as well. And then Urlacher making a big play down the stretch, you know, showing that he's back, was good to see. So there's some good things, you're right, but that the Green Bay has got to run the football. They're not, you know, they're not going to make it being one-dimensional, or he's going to end up on his back.
Yeah.
He'll hold on to every play.
So what direction do you think they go as far as trying to pick up somebody? I mean, there was a Marshawn Lynch talk. And Buffalo seems like they have either they're showcasing him or they are recommitted to him as a you know, lead back. But they've been giving him a lot of carries recently. And again, I don't know if that's to showcase him and try to drive up the bargaining price or what. But that's one option that they could pursue. What do you think are some other options that they could look at to fill that hole, because remember, Ryan Grant was a signing off a practice squad.
Yeah.
So they've been in this situation before and they've gotten creative. So what do you think they can do?
I think that, you know, they're gonna have to look to, you know, some of these teams, and they might have to, you know, go back to the future sometimes, you know, and you know, maybe, you know, looking at some teams with a little older running back, they don't know quite what to do, whether it be in Washington or in some other ways. Cause that's the other way. You know, you try to find a young person, you know, off the scrap heap or somebody who, you know, like, you know, a cat that would be interesting that I've seen, and he was on Hard Knocks, is Scott. Is he, I don't know if he's still with Cincinnati.
Bernard Scott?
Bernard Scott. You know, just an interesting cat that looked like he was a little talented, you know, but was just in the wrong kind of depth chart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know, if he got a little bit more run, you know, maybe he could do it. Because he looked like he had talent, but he was just stuck in that depth chart. You know, so you know he was going to get enough touches. But they don't have to find that. That's when you become a good GM. Or you go back to the future. You find your little older back that, you know, people may have given up on, but just knows how to get it done. You know, might be, you know, like that Thomas Jones type that just knows how to get it done. You don't want to pay him. You just get him for this. You rent him for this year. That can just.
Yeah, I think Larry Johnson's available again.
Yeah, I was thinking like a Larry Johnson or somebody like that who just might just give you a little something. But they're going to have to be creative with it because they can't look. And a lost art, you know, and this is a situation where is the use of the fullback. So you used to have fullbacks who could run a little bit. See, this is where teams have just gone too far to the other side. So, you know, you don't have your, you know, teams who use fullbacks using primary for blocking, but that fullback type that can do something is different. I mean, this is where I think offensive coordinators got to go back and look at, you know, what's the power of the fullback? This is a guy that's going to carry the load for you, but this is a guy that can run and can do a little bit of stuff. And the use of the fullback, I mean, I think in original West Coast offense, you think about the Rathmans and folks like that, you know, who were fullbacks who could catch out the backfield, could run a little bit. I mean, this is where I think some of these offenses have missed an opportunity. Because you're not going always have that feature back, but if you're able to find somebody who can do some of that too, along with a change of pace back, so I think they got to be creative. I mean, that's what you pay these offensive coordinators. But I think looking for a guy like Scott or somebody who's on a depth chart who's not getting enough tick, who you might be able to move, who you can groom, is who they're going to have to look at.
Yeah, and you know. I think that's part of it, and then the O-line has to get healthy. Either Clifton has to get healthy. Clifton hasn't been right, and you saw Julius Peppers had that man scared.
Yeah.
I mean, that man was flinching.
Yeah, but part of helping offensive linemen get healthy is running the football. He's like, you know, linemen, this current approach to offense in the NFL, although they got some lot of advantages for receivers, have been hell on linemen. Because running the football helps linemen develop and impose their will. So then they become better blockers. So someone like Munoz back in the day, they run the football, but he'd be beating on you so much, but then when it's time to pass block, you didn't want to go up against him. And sometimes they put these linemen in this situation because they don't run the football. I mean, if you use Peppers and you're playing, you know they're going to, if your probability is 80% they don't pass, then you're just going to pin your ears back. And so, you know, even though they're hurting, you put them in a position where they're going, you lower the probability of success because you're so committed to the pass. So not having a running game is hurting this line. You look at the Steelers, their line looking terrible, and they strengthened up a little bit, but committing to the run helps you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, allows linemen to be a little bit more aggressive to get their hits in rather than being hit. And so that's the part that I think Green Bay, much like the Eagles have done over the years, is that, you know, they don't help their linemen because they're so pass-heavy.
Yeah.
That's part of that.
Now, you bring up the Steelers, and that's a great transition. Let's transition into talking about them. They're 3-0 without Big Ben. You know, and they've been getting it done in a lot of different ways with the defense. Mendenhall rushed for 143 yards last week. You know, Charlie Batch, you know, he's good for 3 or 4 wins. If you throw him back there, he can win you 3 or 4 games. He may not get you much more than that, but if you need him in spot duty, Charlie Batch has proven to be probably the most solid backup in the league right now, as far as the guy you can put in there and win some games until your starter gets back. So they're 3-0 going into a game this week against Baltimore right before the bye, and they get Big Ben back after the bye. So they're looking pretty good right now. You know, I know you said that if they could go 2-2 during the stretch without Big Ben, that would be a nice move for them. So how do you feel about the Steelers right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was like 2-2 or 3-1. They exceeded my expectations, and I think this is where, you know, everybody's talking about coaches, but at some point people just got to put Tomlin up there as an elite coach and quit messing around. Yeah, they talk about him, but they don't talk about him with the same kind of reverence that they do with some of these other coaches who've never even won a Super Bowl. So this is, you know, this is Tomlin setting the tone about the next man up, which I like about it. You know, Charlie Batch is the, you know, he's the first middle reliever in the NFL. You know what I'm saying? He just holds the middle innings. You know, you kind of, you know, innings, you know, he comes in about the sixth inning, and he going to hold you until you get to Mariano. You know, that's him. And he good. Now, don't put him in there too long now. He going to overcook. But if you put him in there for a couple games, he just does it, man. And I sat Wallace on the bench. I was so mad. But he just does it, and the team loves him. They rallied around him. And then Polamalu, that defense has just been, you know, they're back to it. But it goes back to their commitment to running the football. That helps their defense. So the question is, when Ben comes back, are they going to revert back to what they did last year? Are they going to continue to commit to running the football?
And I think that's going to be the big test for that team.
That is it. You know, is where the offense going to go when Ben comes back? Because running football has allowed the defense to be dominant. It's put pressure on teams. And, you know, obviously Ben can add to that, but that's the formula for the Steelers. It's always been that way. And so will they shift when Ben comes back? That's the question.
Yeah, so do you think they got the inside track to win that division? Because right now Cincinnati is 2-1, Baltimore is 2-1, and they're 3-0. You know,
this game coming up is a big one. I mean, I think it's going to be a tough test. This kind of game you need Ben for. Baltimore had struggled a little bit this past week. I think they'd be in better shape, but they seem to be getting that offense together. I think that both defenses are going to be great. But, yeah, if they can win this one, then they're in the driver's seat, you know, for their division. So, I mean, they're in the driver's seat. So I would say if they can win this one, they're in really good shape for it. And you know, this is a rivalry right here. So there's gonna be a lot of hitting.
Yeah. And this game is almost like an icing on the cake game if I'm Pittsburgh. You know, we've won three games. If it's the start of the season, I'm sure Tomlin looking at the schedule like if we can go 2-2, excellent. If we go 3-1, that's damn good without Big Ben. And then we get the big guy back, and then we can really get to rolling.
That's right.
If they can eke out 4-0, plus beat a divisional opponent while doing that, that's going to be a major, major, major advantage for them going forward from that point. But then do you almost want to kind of just say, hey, we're going to give this our best shot, but let's just get to the bye week healthy. Let's take this 3-1. You know, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves because, like you said, it's going to be a physical game. I mean, it's going to be a physical game. Both teams are going to bring it. And, you know, if you lose one of those key pieces before Big Ben gets back, you know, are they going to be able to recover from that, you know? It's a part of the game. But, is that a strategy that you think Tomlin may be floating around in the back of his head? Like, maybe we want to give it a shot. We want to give it the old college try. But we're not going to sell out for this one.
Well, I think he's got that next man up attitude. I think they're going to go ahead because I think he sees an early opportunity to not only lock up, you know, the division, you know, to lock up the conference. You know, you go 4-0, they get a good lead in division, not a position also for, you know, having that number one seed in the conference. And, you know, if you can play all those games in Pittsburgh, you know, in the playoffs. So I think, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, if you get a little nicked up, you got a week off to let people heal. You know, I think they're going to go opposite. They're going to like, hey, let's go all out on this. Because this is a message game. We're going to see each other again. We may see each other in the playoffs. And I need to see in the back of your mind that you can't out-physical us. Because I think the two things that happened to the Steelers last year is both Cincinnati and Baltimore did to them what they normally do to other people. And I know that left a bad taste in their mouth. They got physical with them. They ran on them. And I think, you know, even though Polamalu was out, I think that still sticks with them. And I think they want to reestablish themselves as the big dog in the division. So I think he might go for it knowing that he got a week off to recover. So I think that's how he's going to go.
And you know, I wouldn't underestimate the impact of having all of those playoff games in Pittsburgh because I think at this point, Big Ben is like that little kid that you don't take to the grocery store. You know, we got kids. You know, at the age of about 4 or 5, little kids just don't care. They don't understand authority. They just know they want what they want, and they want it at that time. And, you know, see, every week we've all had those moments of like, I can't take this little mother nowhere. And so I think having them home games in Pittsburgh, they'll prevent Ben from getting in any more trouble because, you know, they could put all the Pittsburgh establishment, all the Pittsburgh watering holes on notice not to let Big Ben in.
That's it. I think they're gonna probably protect him to the end. You know, so they want to control whatever happens with him through the rest of the season. No more hiccups.
Yeah, all the strip bars in Pittsburgh are gonna be closed during the playoffs. You know, looking at some of the other teams that are doing well and surprising. You know, Mike Vick. You and I talked about him off air, and just how amazing this run he's on has been. I mean, sure, he's not playing the best teams in the world, you know, Detroit and Jacksonville, but he's doing his end of the bargain. I mean, I tell people all the time, it don't matter who it is. So what? You don't get to control your competition sometimes. You just need to go out there and do what you do, and he's definitely doing what he's doing. And when you and I talked, we talked about the fact that, you know, he's in the ideal situation. He's in the best situation as far as the pieces being around him for him to be successful at any point in his career, even before the dogfighting situation in the prison time. You know, he has a coach, an offensive-minded coach, who understands the West Coast offense, knows how to coach quarterbacks, has the ability to game plan and actually possibly out-game plan somebody. He hasn't had that before. Then he has speed. I mean, speed, all caps, speed. You feel me? He's got speed with Jackson, Macklin, McCoy. He's got weapons. Selleck, he's got weapons across the board. At every position, they have weapons. And right now, he's pulling the trigger like never before. And it's fun to watch because this is a guy who got beat up in the media for the mistakes that he made. And it's good to see him be able to come out of that. And because when he went to the Eagles, I was kind of wondering if that was a good move or not. Of course, nobody saw, maybe he saw this, maybe him and Tony Dungy, who was advising him at the time, saw this as a possible outcome. But I didn't ever think I didn't even know he could play like this. I didn't even know he could have two consecutive weeks where he throws over 220 yards, let alone 280.
Yeah, I think that, for some reason, I always felt like Andy Reid was watching. And I think Andy already knew that the situation with Donovan, just, you know, from the beginning, hadn't been good in Philly, and it had to come to an end. I think Andy knew that probably before Donovan knew it. But I knew he knew he had nothing to lose because, you know, Mike panned out like he panned out now. It's like hitting the lottery. If he didn't, he still had a young Cobb, and he could play the whole, you know, we regrouping and transitioning. So he was in a no-lose situation. And sometimes when you can just sit back and breathe and watch and learn, I think one of the things he learned from Donovan is just how to approach the game. Because one thing he realized is he and Donovan probably started out with a similar game. You know, Donovan was a great scrambler, but he also watched how Donovan approached the game. So I think that was just good for him to see it. And you can see the preparation. I think I was listening to somebody talking to Ryan Finneran from Atlanta. They said you can tell the differences in the preparation. because that was the thing he wasn't doing down in Atlanta, was approaching it like study. And now, you know, he's just so focused. When you're trying to cleanse your mind and be away, you know, something can happen. You know, you come out, you can tell that all that time away he used to just regroup and recenter himself, and he just looked so comfortable back there. That's the thing. That's the danger. Because everybody knew he could run, but now he's throwing that whole passing game. He's looking at the options. His footwork is good. I mean, he killed them. It's going to be in their division up for grabs. So this one looks crazy. And now you got Donovan coming to town. And I love Donovan McNabb, but like Vic might clown him.
So do you think the Eagles are a better team with Vic at the trigger than if McNabb were running his offense this year?
I think they're probably better just because for different reasons. I think, you know, he's a young McNabb. You know, even though he took that time away, you know what I'm saying? That time away was good for his legs. He wasn't getting banged up. And he's kind of like a young, energetic McNabb. He's good because sometimes you just need a change. And I think everything was getting static. Everything was there. No matter, you know, Donovan was doing his thing. The Philly fans just, you know, that's Philly. You know, you get what you get. But, you know, he could never do it. So, you know, it was suffocating the team. And now that I think the reason why he's better is just because there's a different energy around the organization. You know, sometimes when you unlock things, a lot of stuff can happen. And when you take that one piece out that's contentious, you know, there's a possibility that there. So I think just because Donovan was removed from the situation and no longer the scapegoat, I think it was good because now Vic is something that's fresh and different. I think that's just good for the organization. So I think that's why he's better for the team, just because you don't have that other stuff circling. You don't have that, you know, we never really liked you anyway. You know, you weren't the spouse that we want, or you weren't the sister-in-law we wanted. You know, you weren't the daughter we wanted. You know, we wanted somebody else. That stuff doesn't exist now. That was always an undercurrent for Donovan. Because if you look at Donovan's career based on anybody close to his ear, he's one of the most dominant quarterbacks there. You know, without a Super Bowl, that's it. But other than that, he's put up big numbers and most importantly, won. I think all that other stuff made it difficult to win. And that's stuff that Vic, aside from the freshness, brings to the situation. But he don't have all that other baggage. He has his own set of baggage, but it wasn't the Philly fan baggage that was keeping the situation very difficult for everybody.
Yeah, see, that's what worries me about this situation, you know, because Philly don't deserve to win based upon the way they treated McNabb. You know, and is this karma saying, hey, we're gonna show y'all the good life, and then, you know, in 3 or 4 weeks from now, Mike Vick breaks his leg. You know what I'm saying? The man breaks his leg, and now that they got a quarterback that they finally like, you know, they lose him. Just to, God's way of just needling them a little bit more. Just go ahead, drive yourself crazy. I don't care. I ain't got nothing better to do. Drive Philly fans crazy. You know, because it was.
Chuckle on a Philly steak. Chuckle on a Philly steak right now.
For real. It was bogus how they did McNabb. And, you know, I'm a Chicago kid, and he's a Chicago guy. And he's not a guy that I would totally ride for. But you hate to see a guy who did so much. I mean, he's done a lot, and he's been overlooked, unappreciated.
Right.
And honestly, I hope he goes in there and lights their asses up. I hope he just sets Philly on fire for one night, you know, just set them on fire. You know, he go in there like Denzel and Man on Fire, you know, burning cars up, you know, snatching people out of the crowd, snapping necks. You know, I hope McNabb going in just wreck shop, and I hope he slapped Andy Reid after the game. Thanks for the faith, but thanks for the gratitude you trade me. You know, what type of stuff is that? You know, they made him happy by trading him. What? Trading him to a worse team. You know,
the thing about it wasn't his fault that they never really had a running game. It wasn't his fault they put their running game in Westbrook's hands, who could never stay healthy. Again, when you one-dimensional, there's certain things that win championships. And even the New Orleans Saints realize they got to have some semblance of a running game.
They ran the football as well as they passed it.
Yep.
So
yep.
You I don't understand. You know, we talk about this thing in education sometimes, just having dashboard. You know, you got to have dashboards to help guide you to let you know that you're going in the right direction. And there's certain things, when I play football, especially on defense, all defensive coordinators had these dashboards. These are the kind of things you went. You hold teams on 100-yard rushing. You know, you do this. You hold teams at a certain percentage of completion percentage. There's certain things they knew that you could tell statistically, if you do these things, you're doing well.
Yeah.
Offense, the same thing. And most people will tell you that having the ability to run the football is what you need to win championships. Now, it doesn't mean you have to run all the time, but you have to achieve balance. And so I never understood the criticism about McNabb when he wasn't developing the talent. He wasn't drafting. He wasn't – Philly could draft in every other place but running back.
Right.
I mean, I love
we got a caller on the line. I'm going to have him jump in this conversation real quick.
You got it.
Hey, what's happening, fellas? It's Phil.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to the Real Sports Guys. Phil, get on with us. Jump in. And right now we're in the midst of the McNabb conversation, talking about McNabb versus Vic and which one do we think would run the offense better. How do you feel about that?
You know, first of all, I just jumped in. I'm not privy to the conversation you guys just had, but I'm rooting big time for both them guys. You know, I'm not real happy how Philly treated McNabb. I mean, he finds out on television that he's traded. And from a reporter, I really wasn't a big fan on that. I think he gave that city a lot. I look at McNabb almost like a Charles Barkley. You know, he gave Philly everything but a championship. And, you know, Barkley never gave Philly a championship. He never gave Phoenix a championship, but they loved him. You know, but for some reason, McNabb just was never enough. And with Mike Vick, you know, I mean, he paid his price. So I'm happy to see him get the opportunity to take advantage of it.
You think he paid his debt? You know, a lot of people out there would disagree with you and tell you that man didn't pay his debt. He's still being in prison. You know, there's a lot of people out there that opinion.
Well, you know, everybody's entitled for their opinion, but... You know, we are America, a place with second chances. But some people feel like second chances shouldn't be for everybody, just certain people. And I disagree with that. So, you know, regardless of what you think, you know, it's got to be good to see a young man take advantage of what he lost and the game from it. I mean, people forget. Mike Vick at one point was the highest paid player in the NFL. He's a top overall pick. You know, he fell quite a bit, but he's back.
Yeah, he's back in a big way too. And I me and you are in the same boat on this one, man. I'm just happy to see the brother doing well. Just from a perspective of not even a football perspective, just to see a guy come out of the situation that he was in. And yeah, it was self-inflicting. Yeah, he brought it upon himself. But that doesn't make the fact that he can realize that and move forward any less. Any less important or any less moving than if somebody he was incarcerated under somebody else's terms or on a mistake that someone else made.
Right.
And I think what I would add is that and he's been humble through this whole process. You know, I mean, the most he said is that I felt like we could have had a good chance to play the all four quarters. But even in that, he came back and said, I realize it's Kevin Cobb's team. So he's always been humble. I mean, the way he's carried himself, he is, gets it. You know, and I think that's the part that I think is very important. And I agree with you, Phil, in the sense that I like to see them both do well. You know, it's unfortunate that sometimes you have fan bases that, I've been to the link and watched games. Philly fans are knowledgeable, as knowledgeable as any fans about any sport you can get. They know they sport. But on the other side, they define the word fanatic. And at what point can we be more realistic about expectations? And as smart as they are, they always blame McNabb and never blame Reed and the management for not getting the right component on the field.
Man, you call them fanatics. I call them fiends. Because that's what they act like.
Because I'm over Philly fans. And any Philly fans want to call in, jump on, get on with the Real Sports Guys, 347-989-0844. Get on in here and tell me what you think. But, you know, most of the Philly fans I've known have, you know, they love their team. You're right, they love their team. It's almost like an addiction. And they it's one of those things where in loving their team, they will hurt their team. They love their team to the point where it's like you know, the old cartoons, the old Tom and Jerry cartoons where, you know, the little girl would be squeezing Tom, and she said, "I love you, I love you, I love you," and she's just squeezing him, and he turned him blue and all purple and red in the face, and his head's about to explode and pop off. That's what they do to their quarterbacks, to their athletes. They love you to the point where they just kill you. They just can't because they can't commit to you. You know, the next guy always looks better than what they got.
Are you trying to say that the Philly fans are the new Red Sox? That they just destined to have a curse?
Not even the Red Sox. You know me, like I said, I'm a Chicago kid, so they would be Cubs fans. Okay?
They are.
No, you're right. You're right on that point. You're right on that point. Cubs fans are dumb.
Philly folks should be calling in right now. He don't.
Cubs fans are dumb. So, I won't put Philly fans in that boat, but they're just like, you know, Cubs fans are on a super short bus. Like, Philly fans are like on that next size bus up, you know, not on a full size bus yet, on that next size bus up where it's like, y'all just ain't right. Y'all boo a man at the draft. Then he's there for 10 years. Y'all go to 5 NFC championship games. Sure, y'all only won one. Y'all get to the Super Bowl. He take you to the Super Bowl, and then y'all just kick the man to the curb, you know.
Right.
I just can't believe it, man. They get what they deserve, you know. I'm happy for Michael Vick. I really am. And I think his biggest weakness all along, obviously, was that he just wasn't humble enough, you know.
You know,
and I think for a lot of guys, that's what it is, you know. Because he's always had all the talent in the world. He just hasn't had the impetus to put in the other work. And sometimes that's the gift and the curse of being so talented, is that you don't have to. At no point had he ever had to work hard at being a quarterback. I mean, he was faster, a stronger arm, and just more gifted than everybody else. You know, and that's what, you know, separates the guys who have the talent and don't flame out from the guys who have the talent and become stars, is that the guys who become stars have that work ethic, or at some point realize that they got to put in a little bit of work because everybody's a great-ass athlete.
You know, one of the things about Mike Vick a lot of people don't realize, you know, I like you guys. I have a lot of friends that have been in Atlanta for like the last 10, 15 years. And if you think about the Falcons, they were – pretty bad for a while. You know, they had a little bit of time when Rison was there and when Deion was there, they were kind of marginal. But they had to be pretty bad to get Mike Vick as a first round, number one pick. And from where he took them to, you know, somebody like a team that was always looking to get in the playoffs, I mean, it just kind of revived that whole Atlanta Falcon base down there. So when he got in trouble and that owner, Arthur Blank, you know, when he turned his back on him, I mean, even to this day, a lot of people down there still have issues with the Falcons because of that. I mean, this whole Mike Vick issue down there, I mean, it kind of transcended sports. It was almost like the OJ and did he do it, did he not? It crossed racial lines. I mean, and there's still a lot of bitterness down there because of that.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I think it more than anywhere in Atlanta, and given just the social context of being in the South, the southern states of the U.S., you know, that whole situation took on an extremely different aesthetic than it would have in a lot of other places. And, you know, I totally agree with you. I think whether it was justified or not, I think on both sides, I think
you know, he may have been overly supported because of the color of his skin, but I also think he may have been overly chastised because of the color of his skin and the things that, you know, he was viewed to represent. I think also rubbed people the wrong way, given that, you know, you had this million-dollar athlete who was still engaged in some felonious activities, you know, and kind of presenting himself as if he was above common law. And, you know, that'll piss people off.
Back that we talked about, you know, we don't want to get too deep in this, but we talked about the Q score, you know, last week. And, you know, that's the stuff that, those are the things that come out. You know, here's this guy who's making all this money to play this sport, and he can't respect body, whatever it might be. All he does is get projected. So that intersection of race and sports played out. You're right. It's interesting, Arthur Blank called him, didn't he call him last week or called him, congratulated him on coming back? So I think that was reported that he did reach out to him and call him and said he was proud of him. And so it's interesting how that relationship and where that might go. But, you know, how it was handled. And I think for Arthur Blank, what he tried to explain is that this is somebody he cared for deeply and just felt disappointed that he would go in that direction with all that they did together. So even the way he projected their relationship in a disappointment, I think kind of got lost. I think they kind of had that father-son relationship. It's kind of like, you know, how you disappoint me on this level. You know, we talked about this. We went through some things, and, you know, this is the last thing I can even accept you on, you know, because you told me that you didn't do it.
Right.
You just told me, if you would have told me that it did, I don't know how to get out of it. I could work with you, but you played me out here like you didn't do it. Now I'm coming back, you did. So I think that's what Arthur was mad about. Arthur didn't just cut him off. Arthur was like, when I asked you to come to me and tell me whether you did it or not, you said no. Now you're coming back and telling me, yeah. So I could have worked with you on this and rolled it out. So that's the interesting, that's kind of the subtext of the relationship that then got played out, racialized.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that's kind of, you know, I think, you know, as Phil's saying, now people are resenting it, you know, because they see the organization as somebody not supporting it. Now we got Maddie Ice with the face. And everybody loving Maddie. So I think that old piece is still playing out there. It'd be interesting to see him go back to that city.
I had a few friends that was at that Atlanta-New Orleans game this past weekend. And one of the things they pointed out that I was surprised I didn't see on the national scene was they said they mentioned that they saw at least 50 Philadelphia Eagle Mike Vick jerseys there.
Wow.
They were Atlanta fans, but they had on Eagle jerseys.
Mm.
And I've been looking all over trying to find a story on that, but you know, I think that goes back to people are trying to make a statement that, you know, we don't approve of what Mike did, but we still support him.
Yeah. It's a good story of redemption because you really, when you see him talk about his experiences, you really do feel like this is a young man who got it. Yeah, he had to go through something to get it, but this was one of those situations where he had a tough situation, as Devon, you said earlier. He took that time and reflected and centered himself and refocus himself and distance himself from the negative elements in his life and has figured out how to recapture some of that joy that he may have lost. And again, due to his own actions, but nonetheless, even though it was at his own hand, you know,
right.
definitely seems to have learned his lesson.
Phil, I was going to ask you, as we hit on the NFL, we've been in a few weeks, you know, which teams or which individuals have surprised you and which teams or which individuals have disappointed you or you think they just fallen short of expectations in the early part of the season?
Well, the biggest surprise to me, probably like everybody else, is the Chiefs. you know, I had a hunch when I was trying to figure out my fantasy roster. You know, I said to myself, having Purnell down there and White, these guys might actually surprise some people. And so, you know, as you guys know, I'm in Missouri right now, not far from Kansas City, and it's everybody's talking about what the Chiefs been doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Devon was on the Chiefs early. I mean, he was on the Chiefs early in the season saying that, you know, when we went through and we talked about teams that, you know, were out last year that could possibly make it, he made a point to point out that he felt like the Chiefs could make some noise, and they're in a good division to keep it rolling, you know, and they have a really young team, you know,
mm-hmm.
and if they can get some solid play and they can continue to get solid play from Castle, from Matt Whitecastle, you know, if they can get some good play out of Whitecastle, they got a shot to win that division. And at least maybe sneak in and at least be in the hunt for a playoff spot towards the end. Now, when we went through our predictions, I predicted that they would be in the hunt, but they wouldn't make it. But, you know, they put it on a San Francisco team last week that what's up with San Francisco? You know, that's a team, you know, Phil, wants you know, because that's – Mike Singletary is a guy that, you know, I'm rooting for. I want him to be successful. It just doesn't look like it's working.
Yeah, I don't know.
Phil?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know about San Francisco. I mean, that was a team that's really surprised me. I thought they were going to do a lot better. You know, I think they have a quarterback issue out there. they've tried some guys, and who's their quarterback back out there now? Sean Hill? And he's
Alex
not
Smith.
The guy. Alex Smith, I mean, he's not the guy. He's a bust, unfortunately, but, I mean, he's just not the guy out there.
Yeah, and, you know, the defense hasn't been solid. As you know, that was a defense that a lot of people thought was going to be one of the top defenses in the league, and they haven't been solid, and, you know, the offense hasn't been creative, and so, you know, that's been a lot of the reports coming out of San Francisco, that the offense just hasn't been creative enough. They haven't made good adjustments. So, you know, I hope they can right the ship, and they still have an opportunity because that division is, you know, as weak as water. So they still got a shot to get back into it. So, Phil, go ahead, D.
I was going to ask quickly. I just always felt they were 9-17. You know, with Alex Smith at the quarterback, I always looked at them like 9-7. I never felt like, everybody was trying to play them like they were 12-14. And I'm thinking, there's nothing about them. I mean, they got the components, but they don't have a championship quarterback. You know, they're still developing, I think, continue their offensive philosophy. You know, they got a really good running game, but how they going to fit Crabtree and Davis into the game plan and stuff. So I just always felt like, I felt like they were going to challenge and be tough, and, you know, even though that division's going through some transition. But I just always looked at it, I'd say 9-7. And they still could be 9-7, even starting out 0-3. But I always felt like they were going to be 9-7. So I'm disappointed that they 0-3, but I never felt like they were going to be more than 9-17.
Mm-hmm. So, Bill, what are some other, you know, you got the Chiefs as a surprise team. What are some other surprises and disappointments out of these first 3 weeks of the season for you?
Well, I'm surprised with the Cardinals. The Cardinals are 2-1 right now. I mean, granted, their two wins are against Oakland, and I believe they beat St. Louis. But, I mean, we're talking about this division. Nobody playing for Seattle to have a good start. And Arizona looked really shaky with the whole Matt Leinart and Anderson debacle in the beginning of the preseason. So I'm really surprised with them. I'm disappointed in my Lions. Last time I was on, you know, I mentioned that the Lions would win 7 or 8 games. And I tell you what, Matthew Stafford looked pretty good in how many ever minutes he played in the opener. But I think they're going to have a tough go at it. The Lions,
I think that boils down to Stafford getting hurt. I think your boys was hurt by Stafford going down, because they did look like, you know, they looked like they were going to put it on Chicago in that game before Stafford went down. And even they even hung around afterwards. So, you know, I wouldn't lose all faith in the Lions. I think I would just chalk that up to the fact that they lost Stafford and they don't have really anything worthwhile behind them.
And, Phil, I believe you probably made that prediction when I was in China. And, you know, we're both from Michigan. And I probably would have talked you off the plank anyway. My Lions trivia question is: name a coach that's coached the Lions that's gone on to coach another team. Did you get that? I got a 3-day, 2-night save for anybody who can answer something like that. In Phil's lifetime, in my lifetime, Dexter Bussey, Billy Sims. You know, Wayne Fonts might. Everybody thought Wayne Fonts had a chance. Mariucci might if he coached again. I've never. There's nobody. So that tells you about the organization. That tells you all you need to know. But this one, I like sports. So I was in China. I would have called in from Beijing. Like, are you crazy? But you know, I think they got the makings because they got a philosophy they go on, and they playing close, and they going, if they can stick with the coach, they're going to be good, though. Because they got a philosophy that they're trying to put in place. You can see them developing that, and they play hard.
Yeah, so. And they strengthen themselves in the trenches. You know, they've invested in their offensive line and their defensive line now. And that's the first thing you got to do.
Jim Fink, you know, you're a Chicago Bear fan.
Yep.
So that's how you built them 85 Bears on both sides of the line.
Yep.
Right there. So Matt Millen should have known that, not three receivers. Three tackles and a guard.
Let's get three guys who are going to be way away from the ball. That's what we're going to build our team around. They all going to stand way over there. That's how we're going to make this work. So one thing that surprised me, and one thing that you know, I'd like you guys to weigh in on is Darren McFadden has turned his career around. Seems like at least early in the season, you know, I think for the first time he's been healthy, and he's looking good. I mean, this was a guy who there was actually an argument as to whether Adrian Peterson was a better back than Adrian Peterson coming out of college. And, you know, you're finally getting to see a glimpse of what led to that argument or made that even a logical or feasible debate.
I think part of the problem with that is that he was a casualty of a terrible organization. I don't know if there was anything about McFadden. What helped him is they finally settled on a coach who could allow him to take advantage of his skills. So I think some of the organization stuff, you know, he had some injuries, he had a little problems, but I think the fact that the organization kind of settled in on this is the direction we're going to go with coach, we're going to be consistent, this is what we're going to do, I think helped him because he finally could just play, okay, this is the offense we had last year, this is what we're going to continue to do. I mean, he could have some continuity. I think that helped him out, but he runs hard. He always runs hard. He runs hard. You know, and they got a philosophy now. Cause I know what they were doing out there, but now they're gonna run that football, and so that's what I like about him.
Yeah, I agree. McFadden has shown me a lot. Early on in the season, it was kind of unclear who was gonna be the guy out there as far as running the ball. Was it gonna be him? Was it gonna be Bush? And Bush came back last game, but he only got a handful of carries, while McFadden got I think close to 25, right around there. I would like to see McFadden be more of a factor out of the backfield as far as catching the ball, because in college, that's what really stood out to me. When I would see him play in Arkansas, I'm like, man, this guy can run the ball, which a lot of, you know, college running backs can do, but he was real dangerous out of the backfield too, and they moved him around in terms of where they lined him up, almost like a Reggie Bush. So I'm hoping Oakland gets back to that. I don't get a chance to watch Oakland a lot, so I'm not sure how they're using him, but I think he could be really effective that way.
And I probably would add that that's probably a product of, again, you know, they're not selling on a quarterback, you know, they're kind of getting it going right now, but, you know, again, I think selling on a quarterback is going to help his development out of the back. I agree. You know, he's the kind of cat with doing everything at Arkansas.
Yeah, I mean, he was the one who kind of first popularized that whole Wildcat idea. You know, they put him back there. He could throw the ball and run the ball, catch it.
Devon, what did you think about our old Lion quarterback, Charlie Batch, doing his thing this past Sunday?
I called him. I said he's the NFL's first version of a middle reliever. That cat is just consistent. You give him three or four innings, and he's going to do his thing and just go right back to the bullpen and eat and sit down. I mean, you take him off. He had no preseason snaps, hardly, but you just take him off the shelf, inserting, and he just does his thing. He'll go right back to the bench, get that clipboard until you call him again. I just love him. And I never thought he got his due in terms of the kind of quarterback he is. You know, he came up as black quarterback, was beginning to get that exposure. He was part of that evolution. And so I don't think he really got his just due, but he's just a solid professional. You can tell the guy loved him. So it was good to see him. I wish I'd have put Wallace on the damn field. But I had 22 points on the bench, man. I lost by 2-10 or something. Like, I was so mad, you know, to a biology professor.
Yeah, Phil, why don't you share how your fantasy season is going, my man?
You know, it's moving along pretty good. I actually did plug in Mike Wallace to my lineup. He gave me 20-plus points. I ended up winning by about 60 points this week. I'm hanging at 2-1. I like Ray. I picked up a Ryan Grant in my second and third round, and he gave me about 4 points this season. So I've really been scrambling around trying to get my lineup set up. I got Breeze at quarterback, Marshall at receiver, who had a monster game, Antonio Gates at tight end. And really outside of those three or four guys, I'm really trying to figure out what direction to go in. I had picked up Brandon Lloyd and Jabbar Gaffney, but I dropped them right before this game here. So, you know, and both those guys had close to 150 yards receiving, you know. So,
yeah.
Just trying to get it all figured out, man. I got a hole in my backfield. Clinton Portis, I was hoping he'd be the workhorse. He's one of the few guys in the league that isn't doing a kind of like a timeshare as a running back who isn't the premier back, but it looks like they're going to move towards that. I picked up Arian Foster in the 11th round in my league. So,
okay.
He's been the first or second overall best running back so far. I mean, that'll probably change, but that was my steal with the draft.
Yeah, man. Go ahead.
I mean, you know, a couple weeks ago I was complaining about this these individual defensive players in fantasy football. But they turned out to be my savior because I got in late to the draft. They took Grant for me, and I hate Ryan Grant. And the reason why, I mean, he don't do anything for the first half of the season. He might do something late. So then he gets hurt. I had a feeling he was going to get hurt. So it's one of those things when you look at, you know, they had the auto draft. He was in there. I was like, no. But this defensive thing is interesting. We doing it, and I'm focusing. I took some advice on focusing on those linebackers. So that saved me in my. I'm warming up to it because you know you don't get knocked out of the season if you can. You know you got to get in there and look for those defensive players. But you know, like Urlacher gets you like 14 points. It's like having the receiver. You know, or decent running back performance. So.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm learning how to use this new league that I was complaining about before. It's playing to my advantage this year. I love that. So if all y'all thinking about adding defenses to your or defensive players, it might not be a bad wrinkle. I've come around.
Yeah, I'm exactly where you were, D, a couple of years ago. This is our third year using, I think they call it the IDP format, individual defensive player. And it took me a while. The guy that won the last 2 years, he figured out how to draft defensive players. And what you need is guys that get a lot of tackles, especially defensive backs. So I picked up Brian Dawkins this year. I mean, he gets a lot of tackles to be a safety. And then another big stud for the IDP format is the guy Flowers from Kansas City. He's too aggressive. I mean, he's not a guy you really want on your team if it's a real football team, but he just gets beat too much. but he makes a lot of tackles from the corner position. You know, I mean, he's just so aggressive. I mean, he might grade out as a 50% in tape, but he'll walk away with an interception, a couple of deflections, and seven or eight tackles. You know, but really he's a horrible football player, but he's like a fantasy stud.
That's fantasy in a nutshell right there.
Oh, yeah. Man, that's great.
Yeah, that's
just good stuff.
Why don't they play him more? He ain't getting a lot of tackles, but he's been beat deep three times up around that line of scrimmage.
So while we got you on, Phil, you completing our three-man booth right now. We're going to go ahead and include you and let you make picks for Ray this week. We're gonna make our picks for this coming week, break down the games, the highlighted games you got for this coming week, and then we're going to move into some NBA talk for the second hour of the show. So,
all right.
For week four, the first game we got on tap that we're going to highlight is Baltimore and Pittsburgh. Where are you guys sitting on that?
This is tough. You know, Harbaugh's a family friend. I can't even, but I'm a Steeler lover.
It's in Pittsburgh.
I gotta run the gamut one more game. I'm gonna go 4-0 on them Steelers somehow, some way. Tomlin does it again. That's me. Steelers for me.
Okay.
I like the Ravens. I like the Ravens in that game.
Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna go with the Ravens too. I think the Ravens are going to catch the Steelers, kind of looking ahead a little bit, looking ahead to the bye week, looking ahead to getting Big Ben back. And I think, you know, Baltimore clicked this week. The offense finally clicked. Flacco finally woke up. You know, yeah, they was playing against Cleveland, but sometimes you need that little bit of success to kind of, you know, carry over and keep going forward. So, you know, I'm looking at Baltimore, and I heard, Phil, you going Baltimore also?
I'm going to go with Baltimore. I think Ray Rice is going to have a breakout game.
Yeah, that brother
do. I think y'all forgetting Polamalu's back. I think we will forget that the Lord the Hair guy is back in the lineup.
I didn't say it was going to be a shootout.
I just want to make y'all remember, there's a cat back there standing back with all that afro.
Well, Charlie Back old ass going to have to do some running too now. Wait a minute, because Ray Ray still can move.
But Batch, you know, Batch is a crafty vet.
Yeah.
He messed around and throw some stuff, make Ray pull a hamstring. You
know? I don't know, man. Ain't that much craft.
You know,
ain't that much crafting out there.
Charlie Batch played 6 years at Eastern Michigan.
That's right.
I mean, he played 6 years. I think he's the only person in history that actually got two medical red shirts. I mean, this guy came out with an all-conference player as a freshman. I remember because I was in high school myself. And all of a sudden, he was gone off the scene for a couple of years. And then he comes back for like another 3 years.
He's the Brian Cardinal of the NFL.
I thought this guy was an assistant coach the last couple of years, you know? So.
He said he come out there, put on his helmet, he balding, you know, got on a couple knee braces. Guy wearing elbow pads in the football game.
I thought he's good for middle of the league. He's good for like three games and take him out. That's when his clock, he's like Cinderella. That pump is going to come up. So they had to do him three or four more games. He's no good, but he's two. He likes Cinderella, glass slipper. He's going to leave that glass slipper in Ray Ray's hand.
All right, so D's going Pittsburgh. Me and Phil got Baltimore. So the next game we're going to look at is Washington and Philly. That's another one that's going to be intense. I mean, there's so much extraness. And there's so much extra stuff swirling around this game. You know, it's in Philly, so it's going to be at the Link. McNabb's coming back to town. And like I said, I hope he go in there like Denzel and Man on Fire and just burn that bad boy down. You know, I don't know if he got the matches or the gasoline to do so. So I think I'm going to still go at Philly. even though I'm hoping McNabb goes in there and shows his ass, but I don't think he has the firepower to do that in Washington. So I'm going to pick Philly to win that game at home and to keep on rolling and for Mike Vick to keep doing his thing.
I don't even know where to go with this one. This is a tough one. I don't think Washington, I don't think their offense is gelled enough. But I think they got a defense that is, you know, can do some work. And this, you know, man, I don't even know where to go with this one. I'm gonna go with McNabb. I watched him in the. You see the Pros versus Joes when he was teamed up with T.O.?
Mm-hmm.
And they played against some of the old vets, and he just found a way to win. You know, McNabb is a competitive that, he put it on Rick Fox and them. You know, I just think that he is gonna find a way to pull it out. It's gonna be ugly. It's almost like I feel about that Steeler Titans game. I don't know why. I just feel like he gonna figure out how to get it. He ain't gonna get out of there. He just too much pride on it for him. So I'm gonna go with Washington.
Okay.
I'm going to Washington, too. I like them in the shootout, kind of like they had early in the season with the Texans. I think Mike Vick, as well as McNabb, they're going to put up some big numbers. Because both these defenses have struggled at times, especially Washington. So I'm going to Washington. I think McNabb has a big game. I think Santana Moss has a big game. And I also think Clinton Portis might have a big game, hopefully for my sake.
Okay. All right, so I got feeling you guys are going with the Redskins on the road to get the victory and McNabb's homecoming. Okay. Hey, I'm picking Philly just because I don't feel like West Washington's got the weapons to get into a shootout with them right now. But, I'm kind of pulling for McNabb deep down. The next game, we got Chi-Town, the Bears. Rolling into the Meadowlands, the new Meadowlands, to take on the Giants. Now, last week, I don't know if y'all had the chance or had to watch the Giants play. I mean, they just look horrible. I mean, that looks like a team that is totally, just totally not with it. They don't, you know, they got guys popping off in the media, on the radio, you know, about them not having any leadership in the locker room and how, you know, the management is running the show there and keeping everybody quiet, and it's just a real restrictive environment. They just seem like a team, you know, you got cats throwing a helmet into the stands, you know, they're asking for it back. They can't get it back. I mean, that's just a bad situation. I mean, can you imagine Brandon Jacobs having to go up Tom Coughlin? They'd be like, hey, I need security. For what? How do I say this? I threw my helmet into the stands. You what? Yeah, I threw my helmet into the stands. So you need security to go get your helmet because you threw it into the stands. You know, that's one of those situations where you just like, you know what, you go get that on your own.
Yeah.
You go take care of that on your own.
Well, you pull a Singletary and send them to the locker room.
On the real, that's what you do. You have to do something of that nature when somebody does something that dumb. Like, you can't play without your helmet. Do you understand that? You know, you could have threw a water bottle. You could have threw a cup. You could have threw a cheerleader. You could have threw several things, you know. But you can't throw your helmet, son.
Can't do that.
So, for that reason alone, I'm not going with the Giants because I just think there's just too much going on there. Yeah, I think they're going to be desperate for a win. I don't think they're going to get it. I think they're going to continue to struggle. This game is going to be a night game. And I'm going to go with Chicago to keep rolling on the road. That's what I'm going to do. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, I would say that. Go ahead. I'll let you go first.
You know, I'm not sold on Chicago being as good as the record says, and I'm also not sold on New York being as bad as a 1-2 team. I think easily, you know, New York got the bad hand here. They got Tennessee and Indianapolis in the first three games. So I'm actually going to take New York. I think this chaos, you know, I mean, they've been dealing with this for years. Back when Kiki was there and Strahan, the show they used to put on. I mean, it's New York. The Yankees deal with it. The Jets are dealing with it. The Giants are going to deal with it. I mean, it's just chaos. I mean, it's almost like it's not New York with it, you know, without it. So I think New York gets it back on the road. I mean, gets it back on the ball at home. I think they beat Chicago this week.
My thing about New York when you watch them is all the scenarios that you described, Phil, they had local leaders who could get them back on track as well as coaches. Right now they don't. You know, at least their leaders are Jason Tuck and Eli Manning are the captains. And they're not the kind of guys that's going to light a fire. The other thing that disturbed me about it is that they're a running team. They have the ability to run. They didn't run against Indianapolis, a team that you obviously run against, and they just didn't commit to the run. My big thing is I got to know who you are. And right now, on defense or on offense, I don't know who they are. They have no identity. I do know who the Bears are. I was a little worried. I didn't know, but I saw their identity, and it's the kind of identity they have, and they made the run. And so I think the Bears are going to go out there. I think they're on the high. This is kind of win that they had yesterday. They're going to catapult them for a while. You know, I think their next stumble will probably when they face Minnesota or something like that. But, you know, I think that they're going to do – I think they're going to be okay. I think they're going to win this one.
All right.
I don't see why Lovey threw the ball or Mike March threw the ball on that fourth and 3 inches from the goal line play. I mean, I just don't get it. And that just does not sit well with me in Chicago. You know, I agree with what you said. They're trying to get identity, but, you know, it's almost like holding magnets together too close with March being an offensive guy and Lovey being a defensive guy. You know, I know Lovey's saying to Mike, why didn't we run it on fourth down? So, I mean, things like that just does not have me sold on the Bears so far.
I probably would add to that, but the problem was not that the fact was they're already down 10-7 in the third quarter. The question was, why were you even running offensive play in the first place? That's a Lovey thing. Like, you should have been kicking a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right at that point, you're only down 10-7 in the third quarter. You at home. Even it up. You know, go. So I probably would take a step back even further. When I turned to game ball, it was right at that point, and I'm thinking, man, this must be the fourth quarter. It was the way it was built up, and I'm thinking, why are y'all even going for this now? You're only down 10-7. So I agree with the analysis of that, but I thought the call was bad. They should have just kicked the field goal. It shouldn't have been an offensive play. So I would say that. But I think defensively, they are where they were supposed to. They're getting there. You can see they would get down a little bit. You know, it was a good offense they were trying to go up against, but they made plays, and they were active. And Giants defense is nowhere near active as Chicago defense.
And the Giants front seven is shaky. I mean, not the front. The front seven is shaky, and then the offensive line is shaky. And you saw what Peppers did to the Packers defensive ends. You know, I can only imagine how he's going to have, you know, because I watched the Giants go against the Colts. And Freeney and Mathis, I mean, the Giants offensive tackles, they were getting eaten alive by Freeney and Mathis. And so I expect, you know, Peppers to have a similar effect on this game. And when Eli gets pressured, he makes mistakes. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes, but you get him to make a few mistakes. And in the NFL, we know that's all it takes. So I just don't have a lot of faith in the Giants right now, because I've watched them play against the Titans and I watched them play against the Colts. And, yeah, those are two of the better teams in the league, and the Giants just didn't look like they belonged on the field with either one of those teams. Not saying Chicago's on that level, but I will say Chicago does have a little bit of mojo working for them right now. They got a little bit of momentum. They got a little bit of mojo going, and the Giants don't. And I'm going to go with the team with the mojo working right now as opposed to the team who's totally just doesn't got it right now. So that's that game. Now, for our last game, and I'm going to throw it to Phil T to give us up his prediction on this one first, we got New England and Miami. So another one of those AFC East battles. Two 2-1 teams going at it, trying to keep pace with the New York Jets. Phil, what you got?
Well, I actually thought Henny played pretty well in that Monday night game. Well, I won't say pretty well, but he played a lot better than I've seen him play this, you know, so far this season. So, with that being said, though, I don't think they have anything for New England. So, I take New England this game by at least 2 touchdowns.
Ooh, and you're giving points.
Yeah.
You're coming out now. Feeling yourself right now. You coming out. You're getting out points and everything else.
Is this one in Miami or is it is it a home game for New England? I didn't see that. Where are they playing this game?
Where are they playing this game? Miami.
The one thing that I was worried about when I watched New England against the Jets is they got hit in the mouth and they didn't hit back. And that, to me, is not a New England. I'm worried about how physical they are as a team. And Miami's physical. And the same as the Jets. My biggest thing is, you know, I follow Henny at Michigan. I never liked Henny. But I just, something about him, I'm waiting for him to throw that pick. But he's playing. And so this is going to be a tough one because Brady can't lose this one. I just don't think they're physical enough. I got to go with Miami. I hate to say it, but I just think that New England is – people are pushing them around, and I'm not used to seeing that. Although I think Moss will have a big game because defensive backs for Miami will struggle a little bit. Moss will catch a touchdown.
Okay. Okay. I am going to roll with – I agree with Phil. Henny looked better than I thought he looked. I haven't had a chance to do a whole lot of watching of Henny, but he looked solid. He made the throws he needed to make. You know, he hit guys, and he made that a competitive game. But if I'm going to go quarterback, I'm going to go Brady. Miami's defense has looked good. They've looked solid. But I'm going to go Brady taking this one. Just off the fact, if I got to pick between a duel, because neither team has been able to run the ball all that effectively right now, even though Miami prides itself on being a running team. Neither team has been able to really get it going in a running game. And Belichick just doesn't care to run the ball. At least he doesn't care to run the ball or one particular running back. He'll run it with like 7 different dudes, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, I don't like Belichick as far as his effect on my fantasy football teams, but that's a whole other story. So I'm going to go with New England. I'm going to go with Brady. And Brady and Moss, I'm expecting Moss to have a big game against a young secondary in Miami. Welker's going to get off. You know, and they even got a, you know, they got some tight end help out there in New England. You know, Brady and Manning both have a way of making guys better receivers. You know, I think that's a sign of a good quarterback. Breeze does it as well, where you have a Lance Moore who has an unbelievable week, or you have, you know, Justin Edelman or Aaron Hernandez. You know, these guys who are good receivers, they got talent. They kind of come out of nowhere and have great weeks, you know, for good quarterbacks. And they get open and they become factors in games where you wouldn't think they're going to be factors. And I look for New England to find somebody. I think Moss is going to have a big game, but I think him having a big game is also going to open up someone else. So there's going to be an unsung hero in this game, with Justin Edelman or Aaron Hernandez or Brandon Tate, who's another receiver that they have out there who's going to, you know, well, somebody else is going to step up and have a big game, and I think Brady's going to have a big day against the Miami secondary.
Hey, that Monday night,
I'm going to win.
That nationally televised game, Randy's going to be coming out, like, pay me my money for next year now.
He is. Randy's going to show out. He's got to. He's been pretty quiet this year. I mean, he got the touchdown on Revis, but, you know, he got off Revis Island. But other than that, man, he's been pretty quiet these first 3 weeks. So it's about time for the Moss to make some noise.
And you're going to say, just give it to me straight cash, homie.
Straight cash, yeah. Homie.
None of that deposit, though. Bring it in a big suitcase.
Straight cash, homie.
That's how we roll.
All right, so that wraps up our NFL talk for this week. We're going to transition, you know, the last 40 minutes of the show. We're going to transition into talking about some hoops. Y'all know I love this, man. I'm an NBA fan true and through, man. And, you know, I got the NBA channel on right now. I'm watching the Lakers practice. That's how much of an NBA nerd I am, man. I'm watching Ron Artest shoot jumpers right now. I'm watching Fisher and Artest, Gasol, and Shade, you know what I'm saying? They got these boys out here working out. You know, this is what I like, man. So, you know, I was telling Devon before we came on air how this is probably the most covered opening of an NBA training camp, you know, that I've ever seen, you know, in all my years of watching and paying attention to sports, and particularly paying attention to the NBA, I've never seen camps open with this much fanfare, where you have actual footage being shown of, you know, scrimmages and 4-on-4 drills. So it's an exciting year that's kicking off. And one of the first stories I want to kind of get your guys' opinions on before we really dig into this year, you know, we got the Carmelo situation brewing, where it seems like it's at an impasse where there was a trade to New Jersey, which, again, as I predicted in the summer, was a pretty good destination, a kind of a sleeper destination for a marquee player. New Jersey was involved in a deal with three other teams, including Denver, the Bobcats, and Utah, in a swap of several pretty good, all pretty good players and all noteworthy players, which would have landed Carmelo in New Jersey. Devin Harris would have gone to Charlotte. Boris Diaw would have gone to Utah. And Andre Kirilenko, Derek Favors, and some draft picks and some number one first rounders would have gone to Denver. So those are the main cogs in the trade, but that trade seems to have fallen through. So here's what I want to throw out there to you guys. One, where do you guys think Melo will end up? And where do you think he will end up, and where do you think he should end up? Are the two things out there? I know those are two very different things. Now, since, you know, we got Phil on the line, I know I'm throwing you a curveball right now. I'm throwing you an Aroldis Chapman 105 mile per hour one right now. But just give me your gut reaction to those two state questions.
Well, when I heard that the Nuggets had the opportunity to get Favors and two number one picks for Carmelo, who more than likely is going to be out at the end of the season, I'm thinking, why not go for that? I mean, you don't want to be like Cleveland or Toronto at the end of the year with nothing. So I was really surprised not to see that happen. And from what I heard, Carmelo was kind of apprehensive, you know, like wasn't sure if he wanted to sign that extension, which was a breaking point as well. Personally, I think that at some point a deal will get done, probably somewhere around the All-Star break, trade deadline, and they'll shift Carmelo to a contender. And then Carmelo, in my opinion, I think Carmelo wants to go through what his buddies did this summer, you know, in terms of being the most coveted free agent. Maybe he and Chris Paul get together and make a move somewhere. So personally, I think that Carmelo will probably stay with the Nuggets for a few months to shift out to a contender and be a free agent this summer.
Okay. D.
Yeah. I agree with what Phil said, probably what will happen. I think, you know, for him, and you and I talked about this, you know, part of the strategy you got to think about is the East is getting heavy. So where he should end up is going to be tricky. Because I think the Nets situation, for the reasons, I mean, Marcus, you talked about it, you know, with the young talent, I mean, you've been talking about it in the leadership, in terms of the ownership, and the possible move to Brooklyn, and that, you know, that's going to happen. You know, I think that would be a good fit for him. You know, the Knicks situation, if things worked out, would be, you know, back at the East Coast, I think for him would be good. That's where he felt comfortable. Getting back to the East Coast, I think that's weird. But I don't know if that's where he should go. And so that's my question, is I'm thinking, you know, I'm starting to think, you know, a lot of this has to do with cap and everything else, but, you know, after having a conversation with you, I'm thinking about where could he go west? You know, and I don't think they would ever do that. You know, I think they would ship him east, but, you know, given, you know, his best chance, as you're talking, we're talking about off the air, might be on the West Coast. You know, part of it might be, can Denver, you know, prove that they're way to make a move to bring somebody in? You know, or, you know, because his team wasn't that far away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the biggest uncertainty is that, had, you know, Carl as a coach, but, you know, some of it might depend on if they hold on to him, what is Denver willing to do? How do they start off the gate? You know, he might end up staying where he is if they bring the right combination, because the West might be the place to be rather than be in the East, trying to battle with Orlando and Chicago emerging and Miami and Boston. I mean, you know, even Philly. And, I mean, that's a tough road. I mean, if I'm him, I'm thinking he needs to think about where he can get to a final. You know, and right now in the West, you know, you got the Thunder, you got the Lakers, you got some other things, but the power is clearly shifted to the East.
Yeah. So this is, and somebody point me to my soapbox, and I'm going to go climb up on it real quick.
A little bit to the left, man. A little bit to the left.
Okay. I'm there. You know. So Carmelo Anthony, for me, is this generation's Dominique Wilkins. He's a marquee talent.
That. I was just thinking that.
He's amazing. He's an amazing scorer. But this brother is not a championship. He's not the alpha on a championship team. He's just not. I don't think he has a diverse enough skill set to be able to impact the game beyond scoring. You know, and beyond the offensive end. He doesn't seem very interested in playing defense. And I think wherever he goes, he's going to be he might as well be in Denver. You know, it's not a situation where the only way going to Brooklyn or going to New Jersey and then going to Brooklyn or going to New York would make any sense if it's, he can get Chris Paul to come there with him. If they can work that out, which is what is kind of the whole current that's running underneath this, is that World Wide West and Carmelo's agent and Chris Paul's agent are working to try and get them in the same situation. Now, you know, looking at, and me and D talked about this off air before the show, the East is not the place to be. The East is not the place to be if you want to have an opportunity to win a championship. As D was laying out, Orlando is going to be tough for the next 3 or 4 years. Miami's going to be legit. Chicago's getting better. Milwaukee's good. You know, and then you got to look at young teams. You know, Washington, you know, the Wizards may surprise some people. If John Wall can run the point at Gilbert Arenas, but all reports is looking like the old Agent Zero, you know, that's an ill backcourt.
Yeah.
You know, and with Andre Blatch, and if they can develop those winning habits, they could sneak in, they could start developing something down there. JaVale McGee looked good. I'm playing for Team USA, which is something we got to touch on, too. So that's another team. Philadelphia is another young team out there. Hell, New Jersey. I mean, my thing is if Carmelo leaves Denver, he's not a guy who you just put on a team and all of a sudden they become contenders. Whereas when I was touting LeBron going to New Jersey, you could put LeBron, like I said, you watch how many games Cleveland wins without LeBron. Now, that's not an indictment of Cleveland. That team was built to around LeBron's talents. And so when you take that piece off, it's going to be a huge drop-off because all of those guys are guys that fit with him. I felt like New Jersey would have given LeBron the opportunity to build a better version of that team with some different types of players and different pieces.
Carmelo and New Jersey, given that they would have to give up Harris and give up Favors, just, I mean, it's Denver all over again. So I don't think they should do that. I do think he should wind up out west. If I'm Carmelo and given the things that he wants, right now he's looking more at trying to get back east and trying to get to a big market. He might want to go high. He might want to see if the Clippers can get involved in this. You know, that's the situation I would look at for him, because the Clippers do have some assets that they can give up. And a Kamen, a Eric Gordon, a Baron Davis even, you know, they do have some assets that they can give up. And it's still an attractive enough spot where they can lure some people in. And the West is not – the West is – the East is going up, and the West is kind of coming down right now. The Lakers probably got another 2 or 3 years of playing at this level as long as Kobe holds up. You know, the Thunder are coming up, but the Thunder, I think, can be caught. You know, I don't think they're there yet because they haven't had that run where they've really gone deep into the playoffs. So the Thunder can be caught. You know, the old guard in the West, the Dallases, the Phoenixes, and the San Antonios are all kind of in a holding pattern right now, trying to figure out what's the next step for those franchises. And then you have Portland, who's kind of a dark horse. And so it's kind of open right now for the Clippers, you know, if they were to pick up a Carmelo type of player to kind of sneak in there, and if they can make the right moves, become a player. But in the same sense, they the Clippers. And they never make the right move. And they never get the right players. So, you know, for Carmelo, it's a catch-22, because I don't think there's anywhere he can go and he's going to put himself in a better position to win a championship. One, because of who he is, and one, because of the landscape.
And the other thing I might add to the team is, you know, not knowing the cap implications, is Portland. I mean, Portland's got to rethink what their situation is, but they got some assets as well. And getting around somebody like Nate McMillan, you know, is Denver willing to have him go to another team in the West is the big question, which a lot of teams aren't willing to do. But, I mean, that's another team that if they're willing to move some, they got some young players that Denver might want, or they get some other teams in the deal, you know, getting around there, you know, getting in a situation where I think with someone like, you know, Nate McMillan might be a good situation for him. But I agree, he's probably not. I mean, I think one thing that's been a flaw for Carmelo is, I mean, you said that he might be Dominique Wilkins, but in some ways his mentality has been probably even closer to, you know, kind of the situation that happened with Marbury in Minnesota, where you're in a good situation and then your love for going back east cluttered how you thought you could do with it.
Yeah. You know, I agree. He, you know, I've never bought into Carmelo. You know, I've never been a Carmelo fan. I've never really had a strong appreciation for his game. I just think he has the talent to do more, and I just don't feel like he has anything else there. I feel like he has the talent there to do more, but I just don't feel like he does more than he does other than score. I think he's got a one-track mind. He's an amazing scorer. You know, I would put him, you know, right behind, right in that top five as far as scores go with Durant, Kobe, you know, D-Wade. Carmelo's right in that group. You know, he's right in that group as far as being a scorer. But does he impact the game in other ways? I don't think he does right now. I don't think there's another phase of the game that he has a major impact other than, you know, manufacturing buckets, which is valuable, but I don't know if that's, you know, I think he has to be with another star. He has to be with another star. And I don't know if Denver is a place just because I think that team has run its course. That team has got a lot of dumb on it. And unless they move out some of the dumb on that team with Keon Martin and J.R. Smith and some of those dudes, get them out of town and get some guys who can play some smart basketball. If they can't do that, then that team isn't going anywhere. Houston would be a legitimate destination for him. I wouldn't be, you know, again, getting Denver to consider moving him in the West would be hard, but Houston would be a nice spot for him. You know, that would be a nice place for him to land. I don't know if they have any assets, or even if New Orleans could swing something and actually get him and Chris Paul on the same team that way. you know. But he needs to be with another legitimate star. And if he can't get that, you know, I think the LeBron-Carmelo debate ended a long time ago. You know, that was actually a debate for a second. You know, it was actually people that debated who was going to be the better player, and I think that, you know, two or three years ago that settled itself with LeBron winning that particular debate. But, Devon, you brought up Portland, and I want to throw this out to Phil while we have him on the line. Phil, did Portland make a mistake taking Greg Oden over Kevin Durant 3 years ago?
Well, hindsight says yes, but the old-school NBA convention says go with the big guy, you know, because everybody wants somebody to come out like a David Robinson or Elijah Wan, but most times they come out to be a Louis. They come out to be an Oden. So going back, yeah, you know, I think Durant was probably the move to make. But when we started this whole conversation tonight, I was thinking in the back of my head, you know what, Portland is a really interesting team. You know, I like Roy a lot. And personally, I don't think that would be a bad place for Carmelo to go. Carmelo, if you think about it, I think he's one of the best spot-up mid-range shooters in the league. That's what he excelled on Team USA a couple of years ago. He had all these guys creating for him, and he's just sitting back getting these wide-open shots. And even now, if you look at out there in Denver, he's not the go-to guy. Billups is in the last couple of minutes of the game. So I agree that Carmelo needs to be somewhere, you know, where he has another star, another good point guard, you know, to create some shots for him.
Yeah, and, you know, I think in hindsight, yeah, you could say that Portland made a mistake taking Oden, but I think I agree with you. I think at the time the Convention of Wisdom said take Oden. You know, with big guys in the lower extremities, man, and, you know, I'm going to say legs. I ain't going to say lower extremities ever again on radio. I'm just going to say legs. Big guys in their legs tend to be a problem, all right? These big guys in their legs tend to be a problem, man. You see it with Bynum, you see it with Odom, you see it with Yao Ming. Big Z had problems with his feet back in the day. You know, it is what it is, man. These guys, you know, and there were reports coming out that, you know, that this is something that could develop over time. You know, where Oden had one leg that was longer than the other, some weird like that. And, I mean, the margin of error with big guys is so crazy that, you know, I mean, what do you do? What do you do? I mean, it wasn't, you know, and again, there were red flags about Durant, too, because, I mean, this man couldn't bench press a cigarette at the combine when he was coming out of Texas. And so, I mean, the thought was, is he going to be strong enough to score against the NBA caliber talent? So both of them had some red flags coming out. But, I mean, it's really been amazing how Durant has developed.
Yeah.
I mean, just imagine Durant playing with Roy on that Portland team.
Mm-hmm.
That would be, you know, one hell of a 1-2 punch. You know, and seeing how Durant has developed, you know, leading the B team, you know, the Team USA B team to the gold medal in the world, I mean, he looks like he's about to take a huge step.
Yeah.
And I would say at the time, if you think about where the West was in terms of the kinds of players in the middle, you know, with Yao, and I think they felt like they had a lot of the moving parts with Roy and some of the other guys on the perimeter game to handle it, but they didn't have anybody in the middle. And so, you know, you begin to draft for need at that point. You know, if you get a guy who can control the middle of the paint, you know, it makes you stronger defensively. You got somebody who can close out stuff, make it very difficult for Kobe to get in the lane. You know, these scores that they got out West, you know, if you get somebody who can control that paint, as we saw with, you know, with Lakers, you know, you get guys who can control that middle, you take away a lot. And I thought that's what they looked at. And all, even, you know, all, and I don't think his Odom's done. I hope, I mean, he has time to recover in his career, but Durant is definitely out the gate. But when I think when Portland was looking for need, he was like, we need to be able to close. We need to be able to defend in this middle. Because we got all the other pieces. We got to lock this middle down.
That sounds familiar.
And I think, go ahead, Phil.
I mean, that sounds familiar. Isn't that what Portland did in the 80s? They drafted for need because they had Jim Paxton.
He was saying booey on them.
You know, I mean, they, you know,
There they go. That's day one. Every time I start talk about the NBA draft, somebody want to bring up Sam Bowie.
But in addition to that, they also got Duckworth. They also got Sabonis. They also got a whole bunch. They had all them big guys coming off the bench. You know, looked like they would beat you up. You know, it was like, these guys look rough. They were like, they trying to find out who. They was like, you know, we don't fight you if we don't beat you. So they didn't land on Sam Bowie, but they also got a lot of other big fellas who, you know, whether power forward position, center position. I mean, that's been what they've done. I mean, Portland as an organization has been, for the most part, pretty solid. You know, they haven't gotten over the hump, but they've been a solid kind of organization. You know, with the Clyde Drexler years, I mean, it's been kind of solid organization. So, I mean, for them, I think they made the best decision they could. You know, sometimes it just don't pan out that way.
Well, see, I think Oden still can pan out. You know, I'm under the belief that, you know, he was never going to be a 2010 big man, as some people may have thought he was. Because when I saw him play at Ohio State, I felt like he could come in a league and give you Camby-esque numbers. You know, if he could get, you know, I felt like his max potential was 15, 15, and, you know, 3 blocks a night. And that's if everything went great and he became what, if he reached his full potential, he was going to be a player who would give you 15 points, 15 rebounds, and 3 blocks a night. And that was what you was going to get from him. You know, he never really, he has good touch around the basket. He doesn't really have any post moves, and he didn't have to have any post moves in high school or college because he was just bigger than everybody else. He was basically catching and throwing down, which I can appreciate, you know, because, you know, I've seen big men who don't do that, and that's annoying as hell. But, you know, that's a whole other situation. But I still think he can be something similar to that, you know, whether it's just even a double-double type of guy who holds down your paint and blocks shots and plays solid post defense. You know, at worst-case scenario, he can be a slightly better version of Kendrick Perkins, even as is, you know, giving you, you know, 10 and 9 and a block and a half a night. He can do that. You know, he can do that. And is that worth a number one pick? Not necessarily. Not numbers wise, no. Impact on the game for that particular team, possibly. Given what the Blazers will have to go through to win a championship, going through the Lakers. And one thing that I think people underestimate is it gives them a decided advantage if they ever have to face the Thunder. Because the Thunder don't got nobody in the middle right now. You know, and that's the one thing that's going to hold that team back that I think everybody is missing. I mean, their best big man right now is Kristic. And he's solid, but is he anywhere near the caliber of, you know, the triumvirate that the Lakers have of Gasol, Odom, and Bynum? You know, no, he wouldn't even crack that rotation. Kristic wouldn't.
And
so
I think the point I would add, what you put on, I mean, when they got Odom, I like the way you described what you thought you could get out of Odom. Because when I thought about Odom when they drafted him is, you know, if this is a guy who could be in the top 3 in block shots, you know, in the top 5 in rebounding, they got what they wanted. You know, if he can establish himself as someone who controls the glass, controls the paint, you know, get you 10 to 12 points, that's a force. You know, that's an early Dwight Howard. I mean, that's a guy who's controlling the paint, and that's worth something in this league when you got people like Kobe who are looking to get wherever they want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And you got people like LeBron who are looking to get wherever they want to go. But if you can push people out to the perimeter in a way that somebody, you know, Boston did a really good job of doing it, I mean, you're going to be better. And so that's what I thought they were going to get out of it. This is a guy that they could figure in the first couple of years, he could average around 10 to 12 points, but he could rebound and block shots and really work to get there, then they're getting their money's worth. And that part could still happen. you know, he might not give up as much offensively as they would like because of the injury, but, you know, but if he can control that middle, still control that, that's good when you got a guy like Roy and you got some other pieces who can take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't need to be scored big time. You got some go-to people, you know, but if he can help out defensively, you know, especially where the West is right now,
yeah,
you know, they can be competitive.
Yeah. Why don't we talk about that real quick? Phil, before you get into your next point, I want you to chew on this for a second, and then I'm going to let you give your next point. Think about your top four teams, and after Phil gives his next point, we're going to each give our top four teams, you know, as we feel right now, top four teams in each conference. Go ahead, Phil.
I was going to say with Alden, I actually went the other way with him coming out of college. I saw a lot of Patrick Ewing in him. And, you know, the Patrick Ewing we think of right now is that polished guy that had the great footwork, had all the moves down low, but that was not Patrick his first year at Georgetown. And that's all we saw Odin is 1 year in college. So I was thinking that Odin would develop, you know, like continue to develop, have those polished moves down low, so he could maybe give you 20, 25 a night. You can dump him down and get something from him, but obviously that hasn't been the case.
Yeah, you know, when Odin was at Ohio State, I got to see him a few times, and I got to see him a few times in person. And when I watched him in person, he didn't have that fluidity that even a young Patrick Ewing. I never got to see Pat Ewing in person, but I saw, you know, I've seen him replays of games. And Patrick had a fluidity that led you to believe like he could figure out how to play offensively. It's the same thing that I don't see in Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard has a lot of power, but he doesn't have any fluidity down low that allows you to believe that okay, he can develop moves outside of, you know, just catch and dunk. And I saw that same thing with Odin where, you know, he didn't have that the ability. He wasn't light on his feet as like an Olajuwon would be, or even a Duncan when you watch them play, or KG as far as big men who could turn and face the basket and do those kind of things that a Ewing would, and show you elements of what Ewing had. So that was, you know, that was something that I didn't see in Oakley when he was in college. But what I did see was that he was, you know, he was an eclipse when you came into the lane. You know, when you came into the lane, he was, you know, at the back end of Ohio State's 2-3, he was gobbling up everything. I mean, he was blocking shots way out of his zone, you know. And he had good spring, he had good length, you know, and that was what I felt was most valuable for him, was that he could play, he could anchor somebody's back line and allow you to extend. And, you know, thinking back to what Portland is, that's what they are, is a defensive team. They don't play half-possession basketball, so he was never going to get 20 points because Roy's going to be the 20-point scorer when you play the style that they play. You're going to have one guy get 20, and everybody else is going to get what they can get. So he was never going to be a 20-point scorer given the style of ball that Portland plays. But also given that style of ball where they like to, you know, really extend the defense and put pressure out on the perimeter, they needed somebody on that back line, and that's what they gave him. Now, you know, again, in hindsight, Durant would have been a nice fit, but I think they would have been in the same situation they're in where the Thunder is the chic pick right now, you know, but I think what people are going to realize as the season goes on is that they're a donut team. They got a hole in the middle, you know. They got a hole in the middle, and right now in the West, you can't have no holes in the middle. You got to have somebody who can guard people one-on-one on the block. If you don't have that, you're going to struggle. And that's what they're lacking. And, you know, maybe they can get going during the season and make a move to bring somebody in who can do that. But they don't got that now. You know, and I think last year the Thunder tried to make that move to get Tyson Chandler in hopes that he could be that, you know, be that defensive force in the middle. But that fell through because of his injuries. So, you know, I think they're back to square one. It's trying to, you know, they drafted Cole Aldridge. You know, he'll be serviceable. But, you know, who knows? I see him winding up on a poster or two within the first month of the season. You know, so we'll see how that develops for them. But, you know, going to that idea of your top four teams in each conference, I'm going to throw that to Phil T. And give me your top four in each conference and how you see it shaking out.
Okay. Well, I think we could actually see the Lakers and the Celtics again in the finals, quite honestly. I like what the Celtics did. They kept Ray around. They got some quality big guys, you know, O'Neal. And, you know, I'm not sure how Shaq's going to work out, but, you know, Shaq's been playing in his career where he doesn't need a ton of minutes. I like what the Bulls did. two surprise teams here for you is out west is the Hornets and the Clippers. I think the Clippers, don't hang up on me, but I think the Clippers, you know, may have enough pieces. they may have enough pieces.
So Sterling
to
is
make
still the owner.
Hey, Devon, you want to talk to him off this ledge?
I'm going back to Beijing and saying hi after you said that. I need to get back on the plane. This must be a replay.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to let you finish making your case because I got to hear this.
Well, go ahead.
So, I mean, those are my, you know, I just picked four overall teams I thought was going to look pretty good. You know, I didn't mention the Heat. I'm still going to hold out judgment on them, but. You know, we cannot forget about Chris Paul. When Chris Paul is playing well, he's like one of those guys like LeBron. He can make everybody else around him better. So I see the Hornets making the playoffs, and I see the Clippers being significantly better than what they were.
Okay, I can kind of buy that. I can kind of buy that. You know, you made a good case with Chris Paul. I agree. I agree with you on Chris Paul. I think he has a major effect, and he's the type of player who has a major effect on you know, he can raise the play of everybody else around him. And the Clippers do have a lot of talent. And if Blake Griffin is anything close to what he's supposed to be, they will be improved. I don't know how far they'll go in the playoffs or if they'll even, you know, be in contention, but I think they'll be improved. That's as far as I'm going to go with you on the Clippers, though. I'm passing off to D.
I haven't quite scratched off my NBA playbook yet, so I might amend this as we move closer to the beginning of the season. I'm sure we're going to be doing our predictions and start working through the finals. But my early look in the East, I'm looking at Orlando, Miami, Boston, and, you know, Chicago. I think there's some other teams that, you know, can make a run. But I think those are the teams who are going to be in the conversation, most of the season out there in the East. And I agree with Phil. I think out of all this conversation, I think Boston, the moves that Boston made are being undervalued in a sense that they have bodies in the place of the East, and they got a strong. You know, when you think about Rondo. He doesn't have a Rondo. And I know that they can talk about moving some people off on him and doing all that stuff, but Rondo just demonstrated that he's ready to go to that level. And I just think that, you know, they got a swagger about them, you know, that they're just not going to be at all. So I think Boston is a dark horse in the East through all this chatter in Orlando. So I think, you know, but those are the four teams in the East. In the West, obviously the Lakers, I like Oklahoma City, but they too much the fashion pick, and I know because I think Durant made a leap this summer, superstardom. And I think he always had that desire. I did like he's always had the desire to be great. Like he cares about being great. I mean, I think he signed that deal, the extension. I mean, he wants to get seated and he wants to be great. He's got the right approach. He got some guys around him ready to run. I like them. They're going to be somewhere in that four. I don't know where they're going to be. But I still think they're not, like you said, I think they like the donuts. They got a hole in the middle. I don't know how they're going to resolve that. And then, you know, after that, you got this cluster of teams. But, you know, I like Houston. You know, I like what they might become. I like them. I don't know where they're going to fit in that whole picture. But I think, you know, I like where they could go. And then I'm kind of up in the air. But it's going to be around Dallas or is whether or not Portland's going to take that next step. San Antonio's kind of back there, lurking. You know, they like an old dog, don't kick them. Wake up, they're going to kick them. You know, it's like you're always afraid of them. You're like that old dog, you don't want to get too close. You know he ain't got the range anymore. But if he's not in his zone, he's going to get you like a young dog. You know what I'm saying? And so it's like I feel bad not even putting them in it because it's like, you know, if they might, a couple cats might be listening to the show and just might get inspired. But I think Dallas is going to be a challenge there. So I think if I look at the Lakers, I say Houston, Dallas, and Portland are teams that I think are good. I think Oklahoma City, I think they're going to challenge. But I think now it's different when you the new guy and you kind of sneak up on everybody. I'm interested to see how they do now that you expect it to be great. I think Durant's going to step up. But are the other guys going to be able to step up when you kind of expect it to be good? That's the next stage of development. And sometimes teams take a slide when they got to go to that next stage. You know, the star player goes, but everybody don't come with him. He's like out in the middle of the stage. He looked back. He's like the piss. Gladys is out there singing, looking back, and the piss ain't there anymore. Like, so, everybody was out there doing it. We're at the county show. You know, we're just coming
Stop
up.
It,
we're
Stop
riding
it.
On the bus. But now we go on first class. We're on the MTV Awards. Everybody's shrinking on the moment. It can't be like Kanye. So that's the part that I think. I'm not quite sure, but those other teams I think are ready to go, and Oklahoma will be in there somewhere.
All right. All right, and yeah, in the East, you know, Miami's kind of a given. I think they're going to be, you know, if they finish outside of the top three, that's a huge disappointment with the talent that they have just in those three players. You know, if it was just a team with D-Wade and Chris Bosh, I should finish top three in the East. You add in LeBron, and, you know, they should be able to finish top three on cruise control. Boston, I love what they did. I think, Devon, you hit it on the head when you said that they strengthen themselves where Miami's weakness is, you know. And, you know, Boston built a team ready to play the Lakers. Boston and Phil, I think you right on, too. Boston is planning to be in the finals. They built a team that's constructed to face the Lakers. They ain't even thinking about the Heat. You know, the Heat's on their radar, but they looking past the Heat right now as far as the moves they made this summer. I like Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee and Chicago are going to be in those next two spots, as you know, and I think Orlando's going to slide back a little bit this year. I think they have some issues. I think they got 10-man syndrome. I don't know if they got enough heart out there in Orlando. but I like Milwaukee and Chicago to slip up in there and take those next two spots. I think Atlanta's going to slide back, too. Atlanta reminds me of an Eastern version of Denver. A lot of talent, but I don't know if they have anything else. Out west, L.A., Portland, you know, I like Houston, and I'm going to throw another one out there. I think Utah. Deron Williams is a monster, and he has Al Jefferson playing with him now, who is, in my opinion, a really solid young big man. So, you know, I like Utah. I don't know if Utah will make any noise in the playoffs, but I think they're going to be one of the top teams in the regular season. So, you know, that wraps it up. You know, we're going to finish up with the picks, and we're going to get the theme music riding out. We're going to thank Phil T for joining us. Devon, you know, D. Wills, Game Changer, you know, Ray, hopefully he gets better and is feeling better by the next show next week. Stay tuned. Yeah. Leave Bambi alone. Leave Bambi alone. Yeah. Real sports guys. Catch you next week. All right, take care.
Yeah.
Hey,
that was a real good show. Hey, Phil, you still
there? I'm still here, brother. Yeah, I'm still here, brother.
All right. All right. So, yeah, man, that's good stuff.
Hey, if I'm Mario Chalmers, I'm in the gym right now, catching and shooting. Catching and shooting. I mean, I'm not even sleeping. I'm just watching John Paxson, Steve Kerr, Derek Fisher, just catching and shooting. Catching and shooting.
I
need to dance a little bit, honey. Catching and shooting.
All you need, Mike Miller, all of them.
Yeah.
Yep. The floor.
Yo.
Make sure you're in bounds. That's it.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
That's what's going to be. It's going to be, like you said, this is the most anticipated season in a long time.
I'm telling you, man. I can't wait.
And all this, I still think the Lakers are the team to beat. It's like,
absolutely.
Them, they're in the best position they're going to be because they're under the radar. How many championship teams, two in a row, or whatever it might be, you under the radar?
Yeah.
I ain't never seen nothing like this. I mean, nobody talking about the Lakers, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's no drama surrounding the Lakers. Usually, you know, there's something going on with them. You know, whether it's whether Phil's coming back or, you know, Kobe's not getting along with somebody or last year they added Artest. And, you know, there's usually something going on with the Lakers. But this year, you know, they're going about their business like it is business. And, you know, that's a bad sign for everybody else.
Bad, because Kobe going to quietly motivate him. Because I told you, this is going to set his legacy.
He's
hoping to meet the Heat in the finals. But if he win this, the Jordan comparison is going to come out. Because Jordan never had to face some of his top, you know, peers on one team.
Yeah, this is like the Hydra, you know, the three-headed Hydra.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And Kobe's got to go in there and slay the Hydra.
That's right. And he up for it. You know, so I hate to... I mean, this is something that's going to be, you know, I know he's hoping that the Heat come out in the East.
Man, I tell you what, when the Heat come to Milwaukee, I'm going to watch.
Oh, I'm trying to see if he gets that's going to be a tough ticket to get, but I want to go.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, it's you know, Chicago, the move that they made. If Derrick Rose takes that step into that upper echelon of point guards, you know, he puts himself into that conversation as a top three, top five point guard, Chicago's going to be tough, you know. Brandon Jennings, I think, is going to take another step this year. You know, and Milwaukee's going to be, you know, Milwaukee's got a well-put-together team. You know, Bogut took a big step last year. If he can, you know, continue to be what he was and Jennings develops, they're going to be tough, too.
Man,
you know, because, again, Bogut plays at that weakness. With Bogut, you can attack Miami at that weakness.
Yeah, I think that's going to be when you get early, if Miami develops a, you know, a defensive scheme that helps them control the middle, because they got some guys, I mean, all three of those guys rebound.
Mm-hmm.
All three of them are not afraid to get down and mix up. So, you know, if they can get some service for a big man, I mean, if big men are willing to get in there and control, it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. But if they able to put some continuity defensively, you know, they're going to have to look at some old Bulls tapes. That's how they're going to have to shape it. That a deeper defense, you know. that's how they're going to have to come at it. And, you know, so, you know, they can do that because I see it in LeBron's eyes. Okay, y'all want to talk some jump.
Yeah, the mental notes.
But the other side, he got the mom over there like, oh, this is legacy year right now. That's what he's thinking right now.
Yeah, you know he is. You know he is. He don't want to let nobody know that either. You know, he quiet over there.
Right.
Quiet over there, you know.
Goodness. I'm about to go to Mount Rushmore on this one.
Yeah.
I'm getting into the little room at the little table on this one. This is going to be undeniable. You know, this is Jay-Z type stuff right now. You know, I get in there with the greatest of all time. You know?
Yeah.
You know, I can sit with KRS now. You know, that's the kind of stuff he's going to put out there.
Man, is Derrick Rose's Jay that bad? I mean, in the world, man, they was just daring that man to shoot.
that's the report on him, man. That's his, that's probably his biggest weakness right now.
Yeah,
it's not consistent. It's not consistent.
We got to work on that.
Yeah.
Now the question is, is he going to be in the gym working on that? Is he going to add an extra element? Because he had that J, it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, if he has that J, I mean, physically that's not a point guard. I mean, even when you compare him to Deron Williams, physically he's more explosive than Deron Williams is. They're similar in size, but he's just more, like I always tell people, he's the LeBron James of point guards is what he is. As far as his physical build, his size to speed ratio is just, and explosiveness is just ridiculous. You know, he's like Steve Francis before the knee injuries.
Yeah.
I'm interested in seeing Noah. I didn't talk about it, but it's gonna be real Hollywood down there.
Noah's gonna be looking at Rick Mahorn.
Noah's gonna play for the Bad Boys.
See, that's what they need, man. That's what the league needs. Like they need that rivalry. You know, they need that Chicago, Miami. They need them to hate each other. You know, the fact that I'm sure LeBron's kind of, you know, looking a little sideways at Derrick Rose, the fact that he was like, yeah, I ain't reach out to LeBron. You know what I'm going to reach out to him for? It's my team.
Right.
You know, I'm not reaching out to nobody. I'm not finna call nobody else to come up here and play with me. You know, if you want to come play with us, come play with us. Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's like, easy. You know, because they asked him, did you reach out to LeBron? He's like, nah, I didn't reach out to LeBron. You know, I'm not, you know, if he wants to come play here, he can come play here, but this is my team. You know, and I'm ready to leave.
Mm.
You know?
Gonna be real Hollywood down there, y'all.
Yeah. And, you know, at the little rap concert, D-Ray looked right into the camera and said, yeah, it's gonna be Hollywood down here. You know, I like that. Like that. You know, I like that. I, you know, the Knicks and Bulls wouldn't have been the Knicks and Bulls if they didn't fight a little bit.
But my worry is that the antennas are too... That's the part we're talking about, because the antennas... It seems like those three down there are hearing everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And antennas are up, and they're trying to hear everything. And my sense is
And to me, that's a sign of fear.
Yeah.
To me, that's a sign of fear. Because they're going into uncharted waters, you know. And that's why you worry that if they don't come out hot. If they don't come out hot right away, you know, are they going to start – are those antennas going to perk up even more? You know. Because, again, these are dudes who are very – very image conscious. You know, these are three guys who are very image conscious, and they've always had rabbit ears. But now they're hearing negative stuff.
That's right.
You know, and they none of them had to deal with that before. You know, where now, like I said, they went from zero to villain faster than, you know, anybody in history. You know, even, you know, like as much as I like D-Wade, and I think D-Wade is in the top three, and, you know, you can make a case for D-Wade being the best player in the league, you know. He's getting, you know, he's kind of got pulled into that LeBron hate that everybody has. You know, Chris Bosh is there, and, you know, he better step up because people going to forget about him. You know, he's going to be the highest paid afterthought ever.
Highest paid afterthought. And he's just embracing it. Out of the three, he probably embracing it the most.
That's because didn't nobody pay attention to him in Toronto. This brother was ignored for 5 years.
He like a fine woman who was wearing goggles and crazy dress and finally dressed him up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Now she got the makeover.
Either that or, you know, what I liken him to is he's that woman that you see from far away, and she looks real nice. Now we're starting to get closer up to him. Now we get to see what he really looks like. You know what I mean? In Toronto, he looked like, you saw the numbers, you saw the stats, and he looked nice from far away. Now we're going to get up close to him and see what he really is. You know, from far away, he looked like a 10. Up close, he might be a 4 or 3.
Right. Young Butterface. Yeah,
young Butterface.
It's going to get real hot in Miami. I mean,
yeah, man.
The pressure's up. I mean, it's a different kind of pressure. You know, it's going to be real hot, and they got to be, yeah, I'm willing to see this. This could be a train wreck if it come off wrong.
And if it's a train wreck, it's going to be the most beautiful train wreck ever, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a beautiful thing if it's a train wreck. It's just going to go haywire.
You have sports psychologists and sociologists studying for years. How the hell did that happen? You think I'm looking at this stuff for, you got McNair scholars for years looking at this. Brothers coming in here, you're interested in sports. Like, I'm doing a research on the Miami Heat.
Man, the internet might explode, man. I'm telling you. Might just shut down.
The Miami Heat.
Again, man.
The decision
if Mario
of LeBron to go to Miami Heat on the internet. Huh? What you saying?
If I'm Mario Chalmers again, I'm texting and shooting right now. I mean,
for
man,
real?
That man gonna be the biggest goat in the league if he come out and shoot 20% from 3-point line. I mean, he needs to be covered out. I mean, catching and shooting every night, man. You know,
yeah.
Every day.
Yo, I mean, he don't even got to practice dribbling no more. You ain't gonna be doing that. You ain't gonna dribble.
Find your favorite spot on the floor. That's it. You got about 3 or 4 spots on the floor. Just stand there. Wait for that ball.
And you know, that may be who really collapses, is that supporting cast.
Yeah.
Because, again, you got a lot of guys who ain't never won nothing. You know, and that's going to be a lot of pressure. And, yeah, LeBron and D-Wade and Bosh is going to get the bulk of the pressure. But if those guys don't step up and don't make plays, you know, that pressure is going to start to get to them, too. Because, you know, that pressure is being put on LeBron. And then when Mike Miller step up to hit that three, he going to feel that pressure. Chalmers going to feel that pressure. Big Z going to feel that pressure. You know, all those guys are going to feel that. And then all them second-round picks they got going to feel that pressure.
What y'all think if they come out and they come out and start out, say, 4-6? You think Pat Riley gonna be licking his chops, ready to fire somebody?
Oh, Pat Riley. if they lose 10 games before the All-Star break, Pat Riley gonna be coming down. He gonna come right out his box. He's just gonna tell Spoelstra to move over. You head assistant.
He already got the number in his head. You know he does. That's how Riley works.
Yep.
Yeah, he's run all the scenarios. Knows when he's coming down and when he's not.
Yep.
That probably is part of the guarantee. Like, look, if they ain't start going south, you come out. You coming out, right? Come out the bullpen, aren't you?
Ariano,
you coming out the bullpen, aren't you?
Right.
That's part of the agreement. Like, you know, Eric went nowhere in the room.
Nope.
And then Eric came in the room, and they're like, hugging
him. He found out at the decision with everybody else.
I know.
Hey, we got LeBron, too.
How do we do all that?
Yeah, I'm sure he was like, that's a gift and a curse right there, man.
That's it. I know he put his head down like, damn, fix it.
Okay, got to get to work.
Van Gundy sent him a text. I got a job for you.
Watch your back. On the real, Van Gundy sent him a text. I just got my wound stitched up to my back. You know that, right? I just got that wound stitched up. So, you know, he put it in there deep.
Yeah, he did that on some wire stuff, you know.
Did he?
That, you know, like they came down and they.
Like they got Wallace.
Yeah, you're gonna take this hit for the group. You know that, don't you?
Yeah.
I'm gonna do this bid for it. Yeah, my family. I have some family issues.
Right. He did Van Gundy bogus. He gave him a script and everything. Why don't you go up there and just read this? I guess I got some issues with my family. I guess I need to spend more time with my children. That's what the paper says.
That's some old mafia type stuff,
man. This is no boy up there with a 3x5. Just read this.
Oh, man.
It's like a post-it note on the microphone. Your script is right there.
So that's why I don't count Orlando totally out, because you're like, man, we don't want this thing the last few years, so you're going to come here and just bunk us, huh? Is that what you're trying to say? That's what Orlando looking at. I'm like, okay. The other's going to come and punk us right now, right? Just take out. Like, it's kind of like when Marlo came on the scene.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, Bodie was sitting through his teeth. Like, you know, hey, just going to come and take the corners.
And see, this is going to be like the Kool-Aid test for, you know, the Kool-Aid test for Dwight Howard. you know, if he, do he got Kool-Aid in his veins, or do we got some high octane gas in that, you know, because if he doesn't take it personal that everybody's anointing the Heat as a team to beat in the East, and they still don't got nobody on their roster who can guard him, you know what I mean? He has to take that personal. He has to. If he don't come out with some moves this year, if he can't average 27, he need to average 27 points a game. That's what he needs to get. He needs to be up to 27 points a game to get my respect.
Who are you talking about?
Dwight Howard.
Okay, that's what I thought.
I just can't respect this dude because he does. I mean, he's stuck at 20 and 14. Step your game up. He could dominate this league, man. He could dominate this league.
He'll like that guy, man.
What'd you say?
I said, Marcus don't like that guy, man. I remember one of the first shows I listened to. You kicked it off. And Marcus was like, you know, look, he had to take some deep breaths. You know, I got a problem with this young man.
Nah, man, because it's just like, dude, man, you're doing too much smiling and stuff, man. You're doing too much smiling and stuff. Go out there and knock somebody over, for real. Like, you should be dominating. Like, you can't do nothing but dunk. You can't shoot free throws. I mean, you just big.
Now they just came and took your state.
Right. They took over the whole state.
Right. It's the worst thing since the hanging chads.
Man, I forgot there was I forgot there was both in Florida. Wow.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Van Gundy mad, but Van Gundy can't ball. But he's the only one showing heart. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
You know, he looking at him like, I wish a motherfucker would. You know.
For real. For real.
He trying to come out with him, and he just can't. He mad, but I don't see his team showing that.
Yeah.
But they're going to be some fights. I'm going to tell you right now, I got a feeling they're going to be some testiness when Orlando and Miami hook up.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be.
Too much history, man.
Got to be.
Somebody going to do something. But it's just too much history right now. So, yeah, somebody gonna have something go down. Because they ain't gonna put up with all that. They gonna put up with all that dancing. Ron better not be dancing.
Oh no, that's done. He let that. He needs to leave that in Cleveland. That didn't get him nowhere anyway.
Hey D, what you think about Big Blue so far?
Rodriguez hit the lottery. You know, but he's making the right decisions. But I heard this. I knew this was coming when I was in Michigan. They were telling me that, you know, Forte was out in the bars, wasn't really doing nothing, wasn't working out with the team. So I could see this coming. But I think he's gonna play like this, the way he's throwing the ball. Their defense is terrible. So now they get to the Big Ten season. They're gonna lose. If they lose the game, it's gonna be against a team that can keep that offense off the field. Because their defense can't stop in. His defense can't stop a cut. Their defense is like, you know, defense got pneumonia, got something. The defense is catching everything. He got to do something about that. They just can't play. But offensively, they're going to outscore anyone. You know, and if they can keep Denard healthy, that's the other thing.
Yeah, because he's so slight.
Yeah. Oh, but, you know, I like what he's doing, man. But you know, I gotta watch some Badgers. I gotta watch some Badgers that with Bielema.
Yeah, man, I was at that Austin P game, man. They shouldn't even play them kids, man.
I
was watching that game. I was like, man, this is like, damn it, NCAA football, man. What the hell is going on?
I got my phone set up on ESPN so that it'll play the do-do-do anytime something happens. It kept going off over and over again. I was like, what the hell is going on today? It was like going over like it was lottery. It was just like, doo-doo-doo, doo-doo-doo. Every like 2 minutes, it was like, doo-doo-doo-doo. I'm like, somebody else score? I'm like, come on now.
Man, Bucky did so many damn push-ups now. I feel bad for him.
Man, you see
I'm like, he ain't
going to
be able to kill for shit for about a week.
Hey, Mark, did you see that kid from East St. Louis that kicked off the team?
Yeah, man, I saw that.
Apathy. Which, you know what happened?
Yeah, man, he was talented too, man. He looked good in the games he played in last year.
What happened to him?
Man, you know what? I just thought he got kicked off. I didn't see why.
Yeah, they really didn't say.
I just thought he got kicked off.
Violation. There was a violation of team rules in, like, February, and they suspended three guys indefinitely, but the other two guys came back, and he transferred.
Yeah, you know, he probably – a lot of that be, man, they ain't getting along. You know,
mm-hmm.
things ain't going the way he want them to. But they just bucked, man. It's too bad because, like I said, he looked good when he was playing.
Yeah.
Now, I forgot to even ask about the backstory on that. I usually get the story on that.
Yeah.
I'm going to find out.
Yeah, I was curious because the two of them, he had a teammate, and both of them were Under Armour All-Americans or whatever. The other kid is playing DB at Illinois, and he's doing his thing. He started last year as a freshman, and he's doing his thing this year, too, as a DB. So it's too bad.
It is.
Well, it's the Arthur Key going to be the quarterback, man.
Yep.
He got the, you know, his footwork is terrible. I don't know who's working with him or not working with him.
Yeah, it is every year, man. The key to their success every year is having a good quarterback, man. They have, they always have the other pieces. You know, the defense kind of comes and goes. You know, some years they have a better defense, but the line is always there. They always have a decent back. You know, they always have a tight end who can get the ball and do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
But do they have a trigger man?
That's it. And they should be able to get a trigger man with all these people going to spread.
Yeah.
That's a part that killed me. So that's part of Brett's next evolution.
Yeah, you got to learn how to sell that.
Yeah, that you're going to throw enough. And I basically, you should look at old Michigan film with Greasy and all them.
Mm-hmm.
They ran the football. They had plenty of running backs who got the yards and got the notoriety, but they also had tight ends that went to the league, receivers who went to the league. I mean, they had that balance.
Yeah.
But they did run the football when they needed to run the football.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this is an opportunity for him to get an elite quarterback. You know, where's the Tom Brady going to go today?
Right. Right.
Where's that drop-back quarterback going to go today? He ain't
right.
There's very few places to go.
Yep.
So, you know, I think he has a chance to, you know, if he doesn't get that top-tier guy, at least get that second-tier. I mean, hell, Michigan had three guys leave. Mallett, three, all these cats. None of them came to Wisconsin. When Rodriguez came in, they had nothing but drop-back quarterbacks on the roster.
Right.
And they ain't gone.
Man. I like Mallett at the next level. That's a big dude. What is he like, 6'7"?
Yeah. Rodriguez said he was going to change his offense to keep him. He didn't want to stay.
Well, I actually
just
later,
just let it go. He went down there with Petrino with the gambler, with the slick Willie. Had a lead by night. I mean, he left Atlanta like Bobby Petrino left my.
Petrino left like, what did he do? Like week 13? I mean, he didn't even wait for like, I mean, he didn't even do it on like a bye week. He was just like, I'm not coming back this week, so y'all do what y'all need to do.
He called the Harlem Knights. He called the Harlem Knights on him,
like,
mama ain't coming home.
Yeah, ain't coming home no more.
He called the Harlem Knights on him. House the cover of darkness.
For real.
So I said, man, how are you going to recruit some players? Yeah, so. But he's staying down there. Yeah, but in Alabama, I can't figure out. I mean, I know they got the great players, but they just look like pea soup. They just be regular on me. I'm trying to follow them.
Yeah.
You keep doing it. And it's funny because Saban was like a 6-5 coach at Michigan State. I mean, he was a great, great coach.
Uh-huh.
He had that pedigree. But he was, I mean, you were around, Phil. I mean, he wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, he was good. But he's kind of like, he got that Kirk Ferentz love. Like, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, me too, man. Like, every year, Kirk Ferentz is up for an NFL job.
Yeah.
And I'm always wondering, like, why?
Well, Saban came from the NFL. He came from the NFL. I know he was like the Browns defensive coordinator before he came to Michigan State, and I remember going to those camps and just hearing them and talking to them and seeing them at our high school. I mean, he's a real dry guy, you know, so it's kind of amazing that he's done what he's done at LSU and Alabama. I still don't get it. I mean, I don't get it.
I don't get Saban at all, man. I'm like, this guy, most people don't, y'all history, I mean, he wasn't dominating the Big Ten. I mean, he had some wins. He had, you know, but he wasn't, I mean, he wasn't dominating the Big Ten. Maybe I'm missing it. So, and Ferentz is the same way. I mean, I think Ferentz was a great coach, but I don't know. They got him in, like, the top three, and I'll put him in the, you know, 20.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I got to get ready for tomorrow. Got an early day.
All right, man.
Well, this has been a pleasure. And Phil T, I know we've been trying to play phone tag, so we got to connect each other.
Yeah, it's all good, man. Glad I was able to get on tonight and holler at y'all.
Yeah. Yeah, man, we appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. Come on again next week if you can.
Yeah, I got a whole lot of time down here in southern Missouri, a whole lot of time on my hands, so. A whole lot of time. But, yeah, so I, you know, normally I listen to y'all in the morning when I'm getting dressed. You know, I listen to 20, 30 minutes every morning. I don't know what I'm going to do this week. I'd already heard the whole show, so, you know. I don't know what I'm
going to
do. Hey, right, go walk out the door, get to brush my teeth. This be all out of kilter. Yeah.
Hey, the playback.
All right, fellas.
You know.
Have a good night.
All right,
good talk to you guys.
All right, man. Take care, bro.
Take it easy.
All right, later.
Peace.